You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning from 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
Good morning and welcome to Friday's OTB AM. Owen, how are you getting on?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm not bad. We've got a bit of an eclectic show, it's fair enough to say, this morning.
Yeah, eclectic is right. We're going to focus on sport, we're going to focus on fashion, we're going to focus on a lot of different things, is what I'm hearing.
Tommy, the producer, just said, okay, the order is Vogue Williams, Barack Obama and Zion.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that roughly where we're at?
That's exactly it. You've got the running order down to a T there.
So the... And we have some sport coming later on as well, if you've tuned in for that. Vogue Williams was at our show last night in number 22 in Dublin, which was a preview of the Cheltenham Festival in association with Bulmers. You can see it's been picked up here by the international media. The Daily Mail were all over it, it turns out, on. This is, I'm sure most people are aware by now that the Daily Mail is one of the most read websites on the planet, generally for sort of celebrity news.
Yeah, like it's. I think it's a first for Off the Ball that we've actually kind of been included in the showbiz pages. That people, an Off the Ball person, an Off the Ball presenter, as we can see here, this is from our Instagram.
That did not make, Ger Gilroy's shirt did not make, I can reassure people, did not make the Daily Mail.
Well, I was hoping that Ger would make it because that would really have been a first. That for the first time ever, an Off the Ball presenter on the red carpet would have actually made a website.
Yeah.
Until I remembered an evening with Rory McIlroy a couple of years ago. News Talks, an evening with Rory McIlroy after party. Unfortunately, we don't have the caption there. I would love to have known what they actually described you as. Awkward hand from Adrian Barry around the shoulder of Nathan Murphy.
What's that awkward about that?
Or is it Nathan Murphy with unidentified fan? I'm not quite sure.
So Nathan's got a bit of a Liam Gallagher look going on. I don't know really what's happening with me. I sort of not a pair of jeans and a pair of shoes and out you go.
Like, Vogue Williams got involved with Off the Ball because of pictures like this.
You
pushed the boat out and you've created a new dynamic for Off the Ball. So congratulations on that. And it's a pleasure to be in your company.
Classic sort of journalist blazer and jeans look.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's still, like the good distraction tactics from the leaning arm there, basically. That's what we're all here for.
And to be fair, anything next to the state of Nathan there is going to be reflected well upon.
Well, it really is. Unfortunately, you actually kind of rocked the red carpet there. I was hoping for... When I went looking for that photo this morning, I was hoping for a bit more awkwardness. But really, actually, you're at home there.
Did all right.
You're at home.
So that's is that the Vogue Williams segment done?
Yes.
So Barack Obama is next.
Barack Obama's next.
And the story that we're both really not on top of in the slightest, but paraphrasing Tommy, is that some guy met Barack Obama in a gym in a hotel somewhere.
Yeah.
Was it?
That was a story that was told on the radio yesterday about identifying famous people.
Right.
I want to talk about Barack Obama in a sporting sense, but I think you've got another thing you want to talk about. I think
this guy met Barack Obama in a hotel in a gym, and where was the gym, Tommy? Where was the hotel? In the US somewhere. And so the guy was like, well, it couldn't be Barack Obama, and I'm just going to carry on about my workout, and I'm not going to do anything more about it. And later that day, his mate texts him and says, you won't believe it, but Barack Obama's staying in the same hotel as you. And at that point, the penny drops, obviously, and he's like, oh, screw it. I missed my opportunity. It was up the first thing this morning. I went to the gym. Should have gone. He got his autograph, got a selfie with him. Damn it, I missed it. Sort of talks to some of the security people, and they're like, well, we can't confirm or deny whether Barack Obama is staying in this hotel, but go with your gut, dude. At which point, he's like, oh, right, damn it, I've missed my opportunity now. Anyway, he gets up the next morning, goes back to the gym. Who's in the gym, Owen?
Is it Barack Obama?
Barack Obama's in the gym. And I think he goes up to him at some point and says something along the lines of, hey, Barack, you did a stellar job with the Barack Obama Plaza in Moneygall.
I presume a fine job is what he says, to actually give the full Irish sort of phrase to what they actually did.
Yeah.
Which got you thinking of your encounter with Angelina Jolie last year, of course. Rubbing shoulders with Nathan Murphy, shoulders with Angelina Jolie, much of a muchness.
I was in a fruit and veg shop in Hong Kong, as one happens to be, and Angelina Jolie was in front of me in the queue, and I started to Google if she was on. You know the way you started Twitter search.
Did you start Googling Angelina Jolie?
No, I started to Twitter search to see if if other people had seen sightings of Angelina Jolie, and that people would get selfies with her and would go, I just met Angelina Jolie. That would place her in Hong Kong, and at that point I'd be able to go, this is actually Angelina. I mean, I wouldn't have done anything about it, but it would have confirmed my suspicion. So it went on for about sort of 10 minutes. And
long old queue.
Angelina, the fruit and veg Angelina that was in front of me in the fruit and veg shop, had some like striking tattoos. And I was like, well, I'm sure Angelina Jolie must have some striking tattoos as well. And there was some in particular. So there was one, I think, that was on her leg that I needed to try and... That was the one that was going to corroborate that this was Angelina Jolie. So it took me about 10 minutes, and it wasn't her at all. Did look incredibly like her, I have to say.
Well, like the adventures of Adrian Barry should be a constant Friday morning thing. I thank you for bringing us down that alley. The reason why I wanted to talk about Barack Obama this morning is that he was at the Duke against the UNC game a couple of nights ago, which tickets going for about $2,300, just a tad cheaper than a Super Bowl ticket, basically, in basketball. It was going to be one of the big games because people wanted to go see Zion Williamson, the next LeBron James. He was going to be the number one pick in the draft, and my suspicion is that he's still going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. And then, suddenly, in the middle of the game, his shoe blew out, which was a Nike shoe. And the first person to identify this was Barack Obama, as we could see him behind Coach K here on TV the other night.
That guy's shoe just blew out.
We got it here in the corner.
Wow.
So identified there by Barack Obama, as you can imagine, on the court. I'm sure people will have seen the footage themselves. Zion Williamson, his Nike shoes just fell apart. Well, his left shoe, he did a turn on the court and he injured his knee, had to go off, didn't return to the court. And this has caused a bit of a stir. And I think people who follow a lot of college sports will be rightly pissed off with this because, like, Duke has had an association with Nike for about 25 years at this point. And, of course, none of these college athletes are actually getting paid. Mm. That the college themselves, the NCAA in certain circumstances, are... You know, they're spinning a lot of money off an association with Nike, and this guy's seeing none of it. This guy has to wear a Nike. This guy injures himself in his Nike shoes, and who knows how long he's going to be out for. Does he now declare straight away for the NBA draft to never play a game for Duke? Well, that is the debate that's going on at the moment in the States. What I say is, it would be a great old... And you can see here that the stock went down $1.12 billion dollars after his injury, so stocks are plummeting. Yeah. They're still second favourites to actually get the endorsement deal with him. We'll have Vincent Wall on a little bit later on to talk to us a little bit more about that.
Incredible, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't feel too much sympathy for him. He is going to make a lot of money, whether it's from Nike or some other sports brand down the track. I know that.
What if that was a career-ending injury?
I mean, what if, you know? I mean, it did. It looked quite nasty, to be fair.
It might affect his draft prospects. Like being
you
the
think it will?
It might
you said at the very top you suspect that he'll still
that's
go
that's my
one.
Suspicion, but affect his draft prospects. Like, it's we don't know how the severity of the injury yet. It's a knee injury.
No, but I mean, most teams are looking at it going, that wasn't his fault. Is that what you're saying? What are you saying? That he would have got in, that if he has some sort of an injury out of it, that would impact on his draft prospects? Or
100%. If you're not going to draft a guy who's just coming off the back of a very
severe
injury.
And is he badly injured?
We're still waiting the full prognosis on it. It seems like a knee sprain rather than anything else. So that's...
It'd be grand is what I'm hearing.
That's what I think, yes. But like, it is still just kind of hammering home the idea that these guys are just... Like, they're just tools to sort of entertain the masses. Like, $2,300, the former president of the United States is watching. These guys are earning nothing. I think just pay college athletes over there. Or, you know, like, if you've got your entrepreneurial hat on right there, there could be some sort of opportunities for big European leagues over here to actually say to high school people, come over here and earn money for a couple of years and then declare for the NBA draft.
Yeah, you can't really start paying college players, though.
Why?
Well... Because they're supposed to be there getting an education. And I mean, I don't know how dialed in professional sport, ultimately professional sports people who are in college are dialed into their...
Why is it okay to make money off them then?
I guess that is probably a fair question, but maybe one doesn't exactly lead to the other one. I mean, it is a fair point that somebody somewhere, is what you're saying, is creaming this.
Yeah, it's a humongous industry. Yeah. It's a gigantic industry. And so
same for college football?
Yeah, absolutely. No college athlete is allowed to get paid. And a lot of people are getting paid because of college athletics.
Yeah.
Certainly in certain areas of the country, especially where Duke and UNC are based. So they're like, I don't know. It certainly sits very, very uneasily with me that a guy can get injured like that. Granted, I don't think it's as bad an injury as some people are making out, and there is a bit of a dramatization around it. Mm. But it's still a knee injury. It could have been a lot worse. Imagine if he blew out his knee properly. Like, the thing is, the ball is kind of in his court, to pardon the pun, a little bit at this point, where he can just say, screw this, I'm not playing for you anymore this season. I'm just going to go straight and declare for the draft. Mm. You and your Nike endorsement almost ended my chances of playing in the NBA, so I'm going to sit out the rest of the season and just care for the NBA draft, which he's more than entitled to do. Also, there's probably a possibility of a court case here, I'd imagine. Can they sue Nike for...
Who, him?
Him, personally.
Well, what I would do is I'd go to Adidas or one of the other Reebok or whoever it is and say, listen, lads, I'm open for business. And suddenly you've got your entire campaign built around this guy and it has written itself.
Yeah, well, Adidas are actually currently favourites to get the endorsement deal with him when he goes to the NBA. It's a great opportunity for Adidas. There was like a curious promoted tweet that was doing the rounds yesterday that was just weirdly opportunistic, as in
from
Adidas,
right.
Talking about their reliability. I think they were saying that it's just a pure coincidence that ad happened to
Absolutely.
Pop up yesterday.
Yeah.
So Nike obviously have had a fairly opportunistic couple of months themselves with Colin Kaepernick, and wasn't there Raheem Sterling Nike had as well? They're the kings of opportunism, so I'd imagine Adidas will step in.
Yeah, because I mean, I also think if I am Nike, I'm probably going to at some point jump in there myself and try and get that sorted out to get it back in my favour. But here's what's coming up. It's an unbelievable weekend of sport, by the way. Now that we're done with the fashion pages, we are going to get stuck into some of that very shortly for you. And coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to tell you what's happening to the back pages of the newspapers this morning. Phil Thompson is going to join us. It's such a big weekend in the Premier League title race, and Liverpool United obviously is going to be a huge focus for us this morning. Phil Thompson is going to join us on the line just after 8 o'clock. We're going to talk Dublin against Mayo. There may also be other action this weekend, but that is very much the main stop. Kerry looking for revenge against Galway as well. We're going to get Owen's thoughts on that. That's about 25 past 8. We will have the sports news. Darren Cleary will be with us after 8:30. And then at about 8:45, another humongous weekend in the world of rugby. And Ronan O'Gara is going to join us on the line from Canterbury, and Alan Quinlan a little closer to home as well, right here in studio as we preview Ireland, Italy, and of course Wales, England as well at the weekend. So all of that to come. I don't know what you're most buzzing about this week to watch this weekend.
It's a very, very tough.
Congress?
Congress on... I'll be scrolling away on Twitter as Congress unfolds throughout the weekend. The excitement really is palpable in the studio this morning. Can Donegal finally get one over on the big bad boys of Dublin?
Yeah.
And that is the big question this weekend. Of course, there's some articles, and I think Colm Key's saying today that not confident they'll get 60%. That's going to be the big scoreline this weekend, whether or not Donegal can get to 60% on kicking the Dubs out of Croker.
I mean, you laugh, but it could be the most significant thing. The newspapers, the Irish Daily Mail this morning, this is the... hard copy version. We don't have any photographs of off the ball last night in it. This is Kiss of Life. Hudson-Odoi saves Sarri's skin for now. Chelsea beating Malmo in the Europa League last night. A nice photograph there. Schmidt to shuffle deck for Rome trip. So some team news beginning to leak through. How accurate exactly it's going to be, we shall find out. But, I mean, the main story there is that Jonathan Sexton and Conor Murray, it seems, are going to start this game against Italy at the weekend. Despite, I suppose, probably what most people would have felt, that actually it was an opportunity to bring in some of the fringe players, but Carberry, it turns out, has picked up a little bit of a knock and is going to sit it out.
I'm not sure, does that make a difference, does it? The Carberry knock? I think it was always going to be Sexton and Murray this weekend.
I think there was a strong argument to, who knows is the short answer to that, but yeah. I definitely think there was a strong argument too. I know he got 60 minutes against Scotland last time, but to get Carberry in there and give him game time in a way that Sexton, outside of the form between those two, between the halfbacks, and trying to fix that in a way that Sexton... I know he hasn't played a huge amount of rugby over the last while, but it's not as if he needs it, really, Johnny Sexton.
I don't know. I think he does. I think Sexton and Murray need as much game time together as possible because...
Because they're out of form?
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's fair enough. I think there is... I'm not going to rule your argument entirely out of hand on, as I might sort of normally do. I have time for it.
It's really a shocking system, actually. I don't know how to react to that.
The Irish Times this morning, that's John Cooney on the front page there, getting a little bit of exercise in during the week, and he may well get his opportunity, albeit off the bench, on Sunday. Cooney is applying the laws of attraction to up his game, writes Gavin Comiskey here. This is about his pretty meteoric rise over the last few years, it has to be said. And Cronin, this was a stat that I was not aware of, to get long-awaited first start in Six Nations. It's his 68th cap and the first time he started a Six Nations match.
That's incredible.
Isn't it?
It's as much a testament to Rory Best as anything else that he's been locked into that situation. So I actually missed that line as well. So Sean Cronin set to start, obviously. Is there potential shocks in the second row as well?
Yeah.
In terms of actually sticking with it. Like we saw Quinn Roo being put forward in the media this week, so there was always a suspicion that Quinn Roo was going to play a strong enough part this weekend. But his partner,
alongside Alton Delan, it seems like James Ryan is going to be rested out for it. There's definitely a little bit of shuffling. Like the back line looks... almost, from, this is the possible team that Gerry Thornley reports in the Irish Times this morning, and generally tends to be well sourced. The back line looks to be pretty strong, as strong as it possibly could be, I think, barring Robbie Henshaw. And there's a little bit of uncertainty in that team news about Henshaw's role in this. Does he come back in? He's obviously on his way back from injury. The possible squad here doesn't include him at all, so that he's not in the 15, he's not in the 23, that it's Farrell and Aki in the centres, Earls and Stockdale obviously on the wings, and Kearney retaining his place at fullback. So
I think, to be fair, this is the week where the reporters would be least sure of the team. I think the first couple of weeks, we got teams on the Thursday, and they were pretty much bang on. Maybe the 23 jersey was up for grabs. But this week, it seems that people, and the reports actually do state that these are just probable teams, these are just possible teams, that the sources are usually good, but this week it's kind of a lot trickier to tell. Mm. Maybe Joe Schmidt has actually left it a lot later than he usually does to make a decision on the team.
Well, I'm always amazed by the leaking of the team at some point during the week. Like, inevitably, you just knew coming in this morning some of the papers were going to have the most likely team, like some sort of source to inform their selection of the most likely team to play Italy at the weekend. For a camp that are so watertight in so many ways, I always find it phenomenal that there's somebody in there, somewhere along the line, who's leaking at the team.
Yeah.
It's generally pretty accurate.
It's mad, and exactly, and it's consistent. There's nothing, whenever there's a consistent leak, you're like, well, I can actually see why this would happen when it comes to stories that are planted here and there. But when it comes to actually the leaking of team news, it's hard to actually know what is the benefit. There is none, really. It's what is the benefit to the Ireland camp for the Ireland team to appear?
I would think that
earlier?
They don't want it leaked at all.
Yeah,
That's exactly my astonishment in this entire thing. That Josh Smith is obviously very keen on keeping camp and keeping everything within the camp. That I'm so surprised that there is obviously somebody in there somewhere along the line who's having a little bit of a quiet word. I don't presume it's Josh Smith, but I mean,
I think aren't other rugby camps fairly similar in that regard? Mm. You'd often pick up the Telegraph on a Thursday, and they'd have a strong suspicion of the England team quite early in the week as well. Mm. Maybe it's just kind of a wide enough thing within the sport. I don't know.
I don't know, it's weird. I just find it weird.
Yeah, it is. But this week, as we say, the leaks perhaps, as I say, nobody's saying that this is definitely the team, but the leaks perhaps a little bit looser than they often are.
The Irish Examiner this morning, turning his back, John McHenry sees the logic in Rory McIlroy's Irish Open snub, is the lead story here in the Irish Examiner this morning. Thoughts of Ronan O'Gara as well, mainly on the state of French rugby, a little bit in about the Ireland game as well. We will get Ronan's thoughts a little bit later in the show, but the news obviously that Rory McIlroy isn't going to play in the Irish Open, and I mean, I think Rory McIlroy really can do whatever the hell he wants when it comes to the Irish Open, because it's not as if he owes the thing anything. He obviously brought it back from the brink of death at one point over the last few years. I think it's fair enough. Choose what he wants to do.
You're not going to get an argument out of me on this one. Myself and Maura Trasser were in here yesterday talking about it, and we were kind of on that same page as well, that it is fair enough. That I just think you get to a stage, what age is he now, 29 years old? Mm. And there was obviously huge promise, and he was kind of like looking around at the golfing landscape, and he was top of the mountain in that regard a few years ago, and we just thought this is going to be major after major after major, one a year, one every second year at worst, and now he's gone on a drought for a couple of years without a major. So when you're 29 years old, it's not last chance saloon, obviously, when it comes to golf. When it comes to perhaps getting the most out of your peak, now is really the time. And you talk about marginal gains, and the phrase gets, ostracised so much, but is the fact that he's skipping the Irish Open a marginal gain in terms of going after the win at Portrush? I think it probably is. And I think you kind of have to say fair enough to him in that regard. Because I guess, he says, this has got more of an added importance this year, the Open being on this island. And you have to take him at face value when he says that. Mm. He'd love to win this year's Open more than any other Open.
Yeah, it's fair enough. It's also written about in the back page of the Irish Independent this morning as well as McCarthy lift as Crowley eyes Ireland switch. Mick McCarthy writes, John Fallon here, may have lost Declan Rice, but Daniel Crowley has confirmed that he's coming the other way, and he's applying for a transfer from England to Ireland, midfielder. And this is good news in a month of not great news. I mean, I don't know if this is a guy that necessarily the Irish Independent definitely got big in it this morning. He's not coming straight into that team, but a boost nevertheless.
Yeah, he's only 21 years old. The name's been on the radar for a few years now. particularly within an Arsenal context, when you hear that there is an Irish qualified player who's involved in a team like that, you start to get a bit excited. So obviously that was happening when he was extremely young. He talks about Euro 2016 and saying he didn't have an England shirt and he wasn't cheering them on in Euro 2016, that Ireland was his team in the Euros in 2016. So that's all we need. It is a similar situation to Declan Rice, where it's kind of like a grandfather connection.
Yeah.
Waterford, Cork, and I think there's one other county as well, which is the connection there through his family.
He's Charlie Haughey, essentially, is what you're saying. He's a bit of everywhere.
Exactly.
Gavin won't be fazed if a team failed to fire in the league, says Mick O'Dwyer, who's a man we don't hear often enough from. And he's totally right as well. I mean, Dublin could end up getting relegated from the league and still go on and win the championship here.
Yeah, still raging hot favourites for the championship. Mm. Missing three of their most influential players still, so...
Raging hot favourites,
yeah. To the point of certainty that they'll win the All-Ireland.
And Galway and Cork joined Donegal motion to reduce Dubs Croker clash. This was the headline that you mentioned in relation to Congress upcoming. Sexton to get the nod for rare Rome outing, writes the Times Ireland edition here. Schmidt wants fly half to get more game time. Rory riding the Mexican wave, he's going pretty well in Mexico, and some news that Darren's going to tell us a little bit more about later on. Breakdancing at the Olympics as well is another really interesting story that we'll probably talk a little bit more about later on, will we?
Yeah,
we're buzzing for that. It's the thing that has occupied in the hour and a half that we've been in studio before we commit to before we came on air. It's the one thing that you've been pretty exercised about.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I'm as exercised as squash fans out there. Squash once again getting snubbed for the Olympics.
They're pissed. Squash fans are pissed.
But they really are, and they have every right to be. Mm. Like, which would you rather watch at the Olympics, squash or breakdancing?
That's got to be squash for me.
Well, you know, the breakdancing fraternity out there this morning are going to be hot on your heels after that disgraceful comment. Back page of the Irish Daily Star is Swede for Sarri. Improved Blues take pressure off their boss with their Europa League win last night. The back page of the Mirror also deals with the theme of pressure, and it's about Liverpool. Pressure, we love it, roars Hendo. Cop stars relish heat of title battle. It's Manchester United against Liverpool at 2:05 this Sunday. You've also got pictures of Ross Barkley and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang there as well, with Chelsea and Arsenal's wins in the Europa League last night. And it is Chelsea leading the way as well on the back of the Sun. Smoking, says the headline. Ross is on fire in Blues cruise. Reffing and blinding as well is the headline on the Celtic defeat. Brendan Rodgers is not happy with the ref as Valencia beat them 1-0 on the night at the Mestalla. Back page of the Racing Post is happy to be home. Hammers crying out to be back for victory over struggling Fulham. It's West Ham against Fulham tonight at 7:45. The back page of the Herald then is Hayes has his focus. Dub wants boys to knuckle down in league after Euro exit. And Dublin and Mayo battle selling close to 30,000. So it's a bit up from Dublin's last game in Croke Park. 30,000 expected to show up
great, isn't it?
Tomorrow evening. It is, and no less than you'd expect, really.
Are you going to go to it?
I'm not, no.
Are you not there on some sort of a scouting mission for the...
Absolutely not.
Your Kerry...
Sure, it's only the league.
...cohort.
It's only the league.
Are you you're going to Tuam, are you, on Sunday?
No, I'm not going to Tuam on Sunday, yeah.
What?
Yeah, I'm not going to be there, unfortunately.
Is there some sort of a weird music festival? Remember this time last year?
Oh, it's not a music festival. I'm not going to be around, no. I'm always reluctant to tell you any plans I have. Just
was it Daniel Bedingfield you went to last year instead of... Who did you go to?
What did you say? It was who?
Daniel Bedingfield. Was it?
Daniel Bedingfield. Now, there is a throwback to 2002 right there.
Who did you...
Why did Daniel Bedingfield come into your head?
I just think because it was some sort morning? Of cheesy pop act that you went to last year instead of going to...
Cheesy pop
Kerry,
act?
Kerry League games.
That's not true.
Was it?
Well, that's just like blatantly untrue. I think I was at every Kerry League game last year.
No, it's a championship game you missed. There was definitely a game you missed last year to go to some cheesy pop act.
I just didn't go to any cheesy pop act last year. I think you're inventing stuff. Daniel Bedingfield. Back page of The Guardian this morning is Gatland and Jones show. Wales coach calls England Sinclair emotional time bomb. It's a great line there for Warren Gatland, who of course would have worked with Sinclair, pretty sure, in the British and Irish Lions. And the Daily Telegraph then this morning. Blues relief for Sarri. It's Olivier Giroud pointing to the sky. And the rugby lead there is Gatland warning on time bomb Sinclair as well. Few verbal barbs between Warren Gatland and Eddie Jones. Jones calling this the best Welsh team of all time. And also a reminder that Wales don't get to pick whether or not the roof is going to be open when it comes to this game at the Principality Stadium. And England have elected to keep it open. Warren Gatland saying, I just don't know why this is. It is a bit ridiculous.
Why that they don't just get to call it?
Why don't Wales get to call whether or not
I mean, they can see that it's pretty unfair advantage on every single team they play where they get to decide... that they get to decide whether the roof is open or not. It's pretty... It will be an unfair advantage.
Yeah, but it's your home ground. You're supposed to have unfair advantages. You're supposed to control all the elements you possibly can control in your home ground.
Yeah. You skipped the minor final as well. Was that Daniel Bedingfield?
The minor final. I was at electric painting last year for the minor final, but sure, I wouldn't take a ticket off a genuine Dublin or Tyrone fan who were there for the senior final.
Would that not be genuine? Would you not be more genuine Kerry fan to be there to be at the minor game? Well, more genuine.
No, the senior final is the real deal. Sure, those Kerry fellas will win All Ireland in years to come.
Liverpool legend Phil Thompson standing by. We're going to get his thoughts on the big game this weekend, Liverpool United. But before that, Gary Breen was on the show last night with Johnny, and he was talking about Liverpool's title credentials.
I think Liverpool would dominate. I know, like, we've got two teams who are devastating on a counter attack, but I think Liverpool would dominate possession. I think United will want to suck them in a little bit to create a bit of space. But if I had to go for anyone, and this is the one thing I say, if you're going to be title winners, you have to go to these places and win. Regardless of the rivalry, the history between both games, if you're looking to win the title, you have to go away to the fourth best team in the league and you have to win. And I just feel that Liverpool will do it because I don't think that United defence is good enough.
Shane?
Yeah, I'd be of the same opinion if I'd be leaning towards. I think there'll be goals. I definitely think there'll be goals. I think we're probably looking at, if I had to go for one, I'd say 2-1 to Liverpool, yeah.
But who wins the title, Gary?
Well, as Shane said there, it would be an unbelievable result if they do go and win there. The momentum they'll have, and I think they'll probably have a really strong end to the season, but City will still win the title.
Phil Thompson, do you go with all of that?
Oh, just can't stop laughing. I go along with the Liverpool winning at Old Trafford. And I certainly won't go along with them that Manchester City will win it. They said there'll be an unbelievable bounce if Liverpool win at Old Trafford on Sunday. And that will be, I think that will carry them to the title. I really do. A draw won't be a bad result for Liverpool at Old Trafford, but I think the win and what it will do for them and the lift that they will get going into the, I think there's only then Everton away, and I think it's Chelsea and Spurs at Anfield. So the fixtures are not too bad for Liverpool. Mm. But it's got the makings of a tremendous game. It didn't have that feel under Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, or for a while, like, it does feel as if it's actually a rivalry now in a game on Sunday that means something in a way that it hasn't done for the last, a lot of years, really.
Oh, absolutely. You're looking at it with Jose, there was a fear factor, wasn't it? I think he realised Liverpool were better than them. They've come through the Van Gaal era, the David Moyes era. Things weren't great. Liverpool were looking always the better team. And certainly under Jose, it was a bit of frightened football. It was typical Jose. And that's not what Manchester United were about. They wanted to compete. Yes, they still got good results, but it wasn't the type of football that it was. And I think what Ole has done since he's come back in there is nothing short of phenomenal. And they have. And I know we can always say that a lot of the fixtures were kind to him, but this Premier League, you've still got to go and win it. And what I've seen on Monday night at Chelsea, I thought it was terrific. Yes, the second half was quite defensive, but the counter-attack, they were absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about Jose there, Phil. You may need to have a word with your Sky Sports colleague, Paul Merson, because he says Liverpool look tight and tense. They are playing a bit like Manchester United were playing under Jose.
Liverpool are playing like that?
Yeah. There's a lot of nerves, he says.
Have you listened to Paul Merson? I've been working with him now for 10 years. He was absolutely gobbledygook. I'll have to have a word with him tomorrow. Listen, Merson can say that. No, we don't. Liverpool, as you can see, can only play in one way, and I've done that for a long time. Yes, the defence has been better since Van Dijk has been in there, but you've seen them for the last couple of years. It is very much an offensive side. And it's certainly not a Jose Mourinho side by any means. It's high press. I can't remember Jose Mourinho ever doing that, even at Chelsea in his heyday. So does Liverpool not got anything about a Jose Mourinho side ever?
It's unlikely to be a repeat of the game, obviously, we saw in December. But I wondered which United team you would rather face, Phil. Because, I mean, like on the face of it, obviously, the Mourinho defensive outlook or what we assume Solskjaer is going to bring to it on Sunday, which would be, as you say, that high-press, more attacking game that actually, in some ways, might suit Liverpool.
Yeah, listen, as I said about the Manchester United at Stamford Bridge on Monday night, it wasn't all sort of free-flowing. Yes, they had to defend a lot in the second half. Chelsea had a lot of possession. But even the defensive side of Manchester United looks a lot more sort of settled. I know who I'd rather be playing against, that Manchester United team that came to Anfield in December, because they were so short of confidence defensively, midfield, up front. It was a team which was so disconnected, it was untrue. But this side has belief, a bit more of that with Deacon. They're still not great defensively, but they are a lot better, and they look as though they want to sort of be together and defend together when they have to do. When they break as not just a one or two, but in a four and five.
We were chatting to you a couple of weeks ago about sort of some Liverpool nerves that may have been, I guess, calmed in the meantime. But just in terms of some of the specifics, like Mo Salah, obviously particularly 20 goals for the season, but he's 1-4. And I know his style can be sort of drifting in and out of games, Phil, at times. But are you concerned by that scoring record or that he might be lacking in a bit of confidence at the minute?
No, not really. You know, I know people going on about the Leicester game and the West Ham game. It was looking a bit nervy. And then we literally, I don't know if you've seen the game, our last game at home.
Bournemouth.
In the Bournemouth game, the 3-0 game. There was some absolute sensational stuff, and Salah was absolutely brilliant there. And then he doesn't play too well against Bayern Munich. Now, if you watch the Munich game, what I'm seeing was twos and threes ganging up around Mo Salah all the time. And he was finding it really difficult to find any space. That is maybe looking for an excuse for him. But there's nothing too much wrong with Mo Salah. You know, this next thing, like, he'll score two or three goals and nobody will be even mentioning it. And I know people were picking up on him on his Bayern Munich game and saying that he hadn't played well. And there was a couple of players who didn't play well. The fullbacks didn't play well. But there was other areas which I thought were quite sensational, which were the ones which people complain about, which is like to Wijnaldum, Henderson, and Keita. I thought Keita was absolutely fantastic. And his pace, whether he plays or not on Sunday, his pace in that central midfield could cause Matic and Herrera great problems.
Yeah, I was at that Bournemouth game, and I felt, and very much the untrained eye compared to your own, that Salah particularly was very much in and out of it in the first half. Now, he comes in at the very start of the second half and scores an unbelievable goal, obviously, and, you know, game's done and dusted. At that stage.
It's a lot with players, and if you watch that, it's what great players do. They flit in and out of games, and they still make an impression. But it's like some of the greatest goal scorers that I've ever known. You don't see them for most of the game. And then they absolutely do something like a worldie or something. And you go, that's what these guys get paid the big money for, these strikers. And Salah's been like that. Even last season, there was times, particularly early in the season, after about 10 games, he missed more chances than he scored. So, you know, that is the name of the game with him. And I think now, back then, he was playing Mo. Now he's superstar Mo. And everybody is looking, when he doesn't have a great game, they're looking to pick up on him.
Yeah, you talk about there about the potential for Liverpool's midfield to overrun Nemanja Matic and Ander Herrera. And I think 10 days ago against Paris Saint-Germain, we saw that happen. Is there anything else you can glean from that game, Phil, in terms of areas that PSG exploited in Manchester United that Liverpool can do the same on Sunday?
I think it is that little bit of pace and quick passing. And that's what we're going to have to be like, because I do believe we will have more possession. And Manchester United, as good as they've been, they're still sort of searching for that cohesive unit all round. I'm saying the defence is better. Matic, I've seen him play more forward passes since Ole's been in there than he had done in all the time with Jose. but they lack a little bit of pace in that area. And I think anything around there, especially with Firmino dropping in that space, and he was sensational the other day, and that was with a virus. So I'm hoping he's still got the same form. But they're the areas which I think Liverpool is the pace and get at those guys and harass them. And you've seen with Matic, he can very easily, you've got that little bit of pace and go past them, and they'll always make that professional foul trying to draw you down. And I think there'll be a lot of free kicks in those areas.
Yeah, and like in terms of, you know, you've mentioned how impressed you were with United on Monday. They're, by the way, they're obviously the form team in the Premier League at the minute, Phil. I presume you've been very impressed with where United are at the minute and what Solskjaer's doing with them?
Absolutely. I said to you before, it's been quite sensational what Ole has done. You can see really that the dressing room area under Jose must have been so toxic, it must have been untrue. The turnaround in some of the players, Rashford, we always knew there was a player in there, but Jose didn't trust him. Pogba, you always knew there was a player in there, and he's quite sort of, he can be off the wall, can Pogba. Mm. But we've seen the real Paul Pogba step up. And he seems as though he's got a lot freer. I can get in that box. I can make sure that I'm going to race and nobody's going to have a go at me because I'm not in my midfield position. There's a lot more freedom with this Manchester United side, what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has brought to the table. And I think it has been quite an incredible turnaround. And I'm saying that because it's not easy to sort of keep on winning in the Premier League. We've seen Arsenal have a great run. We've seen Chelsea have a great run. But then the wheels have come off with it. And you can see them dropping points against all kinds of teams. But this Manchester United team seems to be a lot stronger and a lot happier. And I use the word happy because they look as though they're enjoying everybody's company at the moment.
What's the plan then, when you mentioned Pogba, with that midfield, Liverpool midfield three, to get at him this weekend and upset his play? Because he is so important to that United's success at the minute.
Yeah, I do think so. It's the high energy of Liverpool's midfield. I think those are the areas. I think one of the big things is who defends better out of the two sides, because there's going to be a lot of, the atmosphere is going to be incredible, and the Man United crowd are going to push Man United in that first 20 minutes. I think that is the important time for Liverpool to come through that. I think Liverpool come through that all right. Liverpool win the game convincingly, and I really think that. But it is going to be very, very testing. They're going to come at them. The defence is how they set up. But I do think that area in the middle there, who are the quicker players in the press? Listen, as good as I've said Pogba is, he doesn't like the players all snapping at his heels and getting around him. He does get very, very anxious about that. And I say with the likes of Matic and Herrera, Matic certainly is not the quickest. And we get at him and we can pinch the ball very high up.
Like, I know the alternative is Manchester City, Phil, but you get the sense that United would love to stop Liverpool winning a first league title.
Of course they would. Oh, my goodness. I think Evertonians are wanting Manchester United to beat us, to stop us from the title. And then we've got Everton coming up. And that's all. Evertonians, that's all they're looking forward to, is to stop Liverpool winning the title. So this is what Liverpool have to put up with. And there's been a lot of swell of that. You know, people want Manchester City to win the league again. They don't want... And like last season, it was, oh, I'd love Liverpool to win the league. Oh, Liverpool are playing the best football. Now when there's a reality to it, that possibility of Liverpool Football Club winning the title again with a fantastic team is frightening a lot of supporters of other clubs. And they're thinking, we don't want this cycle again. We don't want to have that problem of Liverpool dominating again. And that's the fear factor, why they don't want Liverpool Football Club to win the title. And so Manchester United fans will love it if they can stop Liverpool winning the title. They quite love to have Manchester City, that's how bad it is, to win the title over Liverpool. But we're still there and we're coming. And I think we win on Sunday, we will win the title.
I have to say, I don't go with that at all, Phil, that I think most neutral supporters are actually quite happy. I mean, United aside, I'll grant you that, and City, clearly, who are actually in the title race. But I think most other people who are interested in football are interested in Liverpool actually winning the league now. I mean, your point might be valid next season. I think for now, people are actually eager to see Liverpool get on and win it.
There's been a swell of support for Manchester City since Liverpool have been, certainly since the turn of the year, when we were certainly 7 points ahead or something, and there was a growing thing, which was nervousness about Liverpool winning the title. And maybe not all neutrals, but I think there's a swell of neutrals which want Liverpool. I think that they are worried about that cycle happening, because football is like that. Liverpool had it before, Manchester United had it. And I think if it was Manchester United or Liverpool, I think people would want Liverpool to win it. Mm. But not the same with Manchester City. There's quite a love affair with Manchester City.
I think what I'm saying, Phil, is I
quite love the way they play, and I love Pep's manner and how he gets his teams to play, and I can understand that.
I think it suits Liverpool to a degree that it's everybody's against us and we don't care sort of attitude.
Absolutely. And I think that's why we should use that and say, let's go and do it. We know there's so many teams, particularly Manchester United fans and Everton fans, who are desperate for us not to do it. Is let's go and do it. Let's go and show everybody how good we are and enjoy the pressure and enjoy this moment and to go and do it. And it has been the Holy Grail. And the people I think Sky Sports had a poll, the Champions League or the Premier League, what Liverpool fans, oh my goodness, I said 99%. I couldn't believe it. There was 58% at one time wanted us to win the Champions League. Oh my God, what Liverpool fans are they? The Premier League has been the Holy Grail for quite a while, and Manchester United fans probably can feel that as well when they went 26 years. And when you know and it's there and it's within your grasp, there's a chance. But if we do not get there this year, I am quite sure, because I said at the start of the season, Manchester City were my tip. And I said, but we will be closer. If we don't win it this year, we will definitely win it next year. But we're in such a position at the moment, I think come Sunday, we are victors. We will win the title.
Phil, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, guys.
Thanks a lot. Speak soon. Phil Thompson there on the line from Liverpool ahead of that game at the weekend. I do definitely think there is an element of, I've not met one neutral fan who doesn't have an historic relationship that's anti-Liverpool, that doesn't want Liverpool to win it.
Really?
Most neutral people want Liverpool to win the league.
Really?
Of course they do. It's with any... It's like people who were happy to see Limerick win the hurling last year or Galway the year before, because it's a long time between drinks. And then what happens is, the minute they win it, the minute Galway win it, Limerick win it, or Liverpool potentially with the Premier League this season, once that minute arrives, then it's like, grand. That's your turn done now. I don't want to see you win it next year.
Maybe. I disagree. I think that there is a lot of people who will get a lot of pleasure if Liverpool bottle this. They'll be very, very happy to see Liverpool bottle this, because it's only to do with the fact of the drought. And I accept that the Galway and everything, you're bang on, because they're counties where they weren't kind of knocking on the door for a while, or they haven't had a history where they've been so dominant for a period of time, or they haven't done great things in the recent past, like Liverpool have done in the Champions League. So there is sort of this aura around Liverpool that if they win the Premier League this season, it'll be the most special thing that ever happens in sport. Say if I was a Liverpool fan, I would probably be kind of walking around like a peacock at the moment, saying, I am better at being a football fan than you because I support Liverpool Football Club. And that's what it's all about. Right. Like the idea.
Well,
that
it's predicated on the United sign that they have, that every year ticks over and they sort of get out their banner, and it's like the rolling ticker of the number of years that have gone past. Like, I'd say that banner alone drives Liverpool fans absolutely crazy. And that was the point about the whether they would want to win the Champions League or the Premier League. I have to say, I totally agree with Phil. What Liverpool fan is wanting Liverpool to win the Champions League over the Premier League?
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that one. But I think it's all about, I think that's what sport is all about, that your relationship with your team is that close that you actually get a sense of ego from what your team do. Mm. And I really think that Liverpool fans this season, probably rightfully, are feeling a little bit more special about themselves because they feel legitimately. They legitimately feel that their football team is more special than your football team.
Yeah.
That they have that,
but at the minute they're
have that superiority complex where the history, the atmosphere in Anfield, the mad genius of Jurgen Klopp is better than anything your football club can produce. Right. And there may be elements of truth in that, but what I'm saying is that there is a sense of superiority around that, which probably doesn't go down too well with fans of other clubs, and they'll be like, I'd love to wipe that smug smile off their face. That's what I think. Like, personally, I think, if I was a Liverpool fan, I always kind of say, I kind of wish I was a Liverpool fan sometimes, because it'd be a good football team to support. But I'm not a Liverpool fan, so when I'm like, oh, you should really get to Anfield now, it's going to be the most special thing on earth. Like, I'd rather be at Anfield this season than walking the moon and all that sort of thing. And I think that's probably going to wind a few people up. And I think Phil Thompson is right there, that Manchester United fans would much rather see Manchester City win the league. Maybe not much rather. Oh, they'd rather see Manchester City win the league than see Liverpool win the league.
The success, recent success or otherwise notwithstanding, are Kerry fans the Liverpool equivalent?
No, Mayo are.
Oh, that's not a bad shout.
Mayo, yeah, definitely are. I think
but is that only to do with the... I'm not sure.
No, Mayo and Liverpool are exactly the same in this case, where there will be a huge amount
of people... How many All-Ireland titles in total have Mayo won?
Okay, so let's just forget the historical success thing for a sec. I think in terms of people deriving happiness from mending their drought, there will be a huge amount of people that will be delighted to see those two things happen.
Yeah.
But there will also be a huge amount of people...
Who the very next day are going, screw you, Mayo.
No, the day before it might happen, say, I really hope they get hockeyed. I'm sure there's plenty of people who said before the games against Dublin over the last couple of years, I hope Mayo get hammered. Because they have this idea that it'll just be insufferable if they ever do win the thing. Mayo and Liverpool are exactly the same in this case. Tons of people want them to end the drought. Tons of people would love nothing more than to see their suffering go on.
Mayo have only ever won three All-Irelands.
I've just said a second ago the historical context doesn't compute.
Yeah, that's why my vote goes for Kerry. But, you know.
They won in All-Ireland in 2014.
It's not to do with the recent success, is my point, that actually, just from the philosophical point of view, of entitlement.
No, Manchester United have the most league titles. Kerry have the most league titles. Liverpool have the second most.
No, but in sense of entitlement. Entitlement is something that lives a little bit in the ether. It's a little bit of cockiness. A little bit of arrogance was a word that you used a little bit earlier on.
There's a big difference between arrogance and entitlement.
Box tickers here from a Kerry point of view is what I'm saying.
Are you saying that they're entitled? Like, that's
Liverpool fans would feel entitled. Liverpool fans can't understand why they haven't won the Premier League recently. Obviously, that comes from a sense of entitlement. And the same, I would offer.
No, I think that's arrogance rather than entitlement. I wouldn't say it's
Kerry is more arrogance than entitlement.
Liverpool as well, I think.
And so Kerry is more entitled than arrogant.
No, more arrogant than entitled.
Kerry people,
probably, yeah.
Kieran Donaghy.
I don't know why you brought it back to that again.
Just because I think that there's a comparison.
Okay, like it's clearly just in a kind of a conduit to wind me up, but fair enough.
I mean, you have just admitted that Kerry people are arrogant. They have an arrogant approach to their sport.
Well, like, I think the way you're going on about here paints a certain arrogance about the way you go on. And is that
the way you go on about it here paints a certain arrogance about the way you go on.
Is that a representation?
Can we get a gift?
Is that a representation of Westmeath people that everybody from Westmeath is arrogant?
I mean, dream of the day we could be entitled and arrogant.
To be honest with you, you have some neck to even bring that point to the airwaves here, that I think that paints a certain arrogance about you.
We must put this point to Kieran Donaghy next week when he's back in for his weekly slot on OTB AM, so we might just do that. He was in yesterday for the Shot Log, our new regular segment that you can find every Thursday right here on OTB AM. You can watch episode 2 back on our YouTube channel right now.
Is there ever a time when a drinking ban can work?
Absolutely, if you want to create a bit of unity and you have a real block of training and you want to keep everybody fit. Of course, there's a time for it, but I think, you know, We're obsessed with it, you know. I think you see all these videos. You see the Irish team in 2006, they beat Sweden and boys are eating pizza and drinking beers and the thing. You see the rugby players after a game will always post, they have a few glasses of wine with their meal. And I think it actually, rather than letting fellas have a few pints after a game, it promotes this thing where we don't drink for 4 weeks. Then you win a game and you go drinking for 2 days. Or as when I started with Kerry, it could be 3 days. And then you've trained on Tuesday night and there's four fellas still in the pub somewhere because we've been locked up for 2 months. This is our chance. They won't see us. You know, they're not a game for another month. They'll get over it. There won't be a big deal. you know, I just think a more level-headed approach to drinking in the GAA. And
did it come in as you got older, or is there still a, it's still there?
Yeah, I think it's settling a small bit, but there's still, like, you know, if I go 2 weeks before a county championship game in Kerry, and, you know, I will be, the question will be, you know, why were you out? Were you drinking? You know, what were you doing? And I just think Phyllis put so much time into training, living this regimental lifestyle, that if they want to go for a meal, if they want to have a glass of wine, if they want to, you know, a week before a game, 2 weeks before a game, I don't think it's an issue. You know, once you can trust your guys that it isn't...
That's the issue. It's a trust issue. It's because there are so many of us can't really be trusted not to go completely mental on a night out. It's like, oh, we'll just have the one or two, and then it's like four in the morning, and you're like, we've got a lock-in. That's the problem. Irish culture loves lock-ins.
Yeah, you know, Irish culture does love lock-ins, but I think that's, it's all because of that. It stems from that we pigeonhole ourselves into this one night every 2 or 3 weeks, and then it's like, I'm going to break free.
Yeah, that was Kieran Donaghy. Shot clock yesterday here in Off the Ball. You can check out the full thing up on the YouTube channel. And some of the Pat McEnany on yesterday talking about potentially miking up refs. It got picked up across some of the newspapers this morning as well, that this seems like a pretty good idea. So, you can check it out, the full piece up on YouTube. I can't see any downside, I have to say, to reffing up the mics in a way that just makes everything a little bit more transparent.
Yeah, and like we could hear it obviously at the Aviva Stadium a couple of weeks ago as well, how quite often that can pick up a bit of chatter or, you know, just roars from certain teams. Mm. Would that actually perhaps lessen the tendency for verbals in GAA, I wonder? That it's like, oh, I can't say anything here, I'm quite close to that microphone.
What'll happen, it'd take a few incidents for people to actually realise what's going on.
Yeah, because I it's obviously, this is kind of going down a tangent, but I think that's obviously still kind of an underlying poison still in the game of GAA, the idea of verbals and sledging and things like that. So.
Well, the thing is that people say that, well, because they're amateur players, they're entitled to have their sledging and say some pretty obscene things, and then because they have to go to work the next morning, they shouldn't have to face those consequences. Yeah. That's the ultimate argument.
And maybe as well, like obviously it's not going to say about sledging, as I say, it is kind of a tangential point, but if you are actually communicating with a ref in a way that you know that is going to be live on the television or whatever, you're going to communicate it in a more respectful way, and perhaps you might communicate it in a more respectful way with your opponent, who knows.
Darren, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
The Mayo team is in, by the way. We did want to mention this, and there's six changes from James Horan here, and Colin Boyle is in, Donny Vaughan is in, Harrison is in, Brian Reap is back in, interestingly enough, but Rob Henley's selection in place of Clark and goal is maybe one of the most interesting ones. I know there's obviously a little bit of shuffling to be done here, and that this may not, you know, asterisks beside this team, may not represent, in fact, the best Mayo 15 that may be available come summertime, but...
Or the Mayo 15 that will actually start.
So has Horan got a history of a bit of jiggery-pokery?
Well, every manager does a dummy team, don't they?
But Reap back in, kind of interesting, obviously one of the hot prospects in the country at the minute. And Henley, I mean, I'm not going to say head-scratcher, but definitely a bit of a strange one.
Yeah, like I think there was always signs that there was going to be a bit of rotation here before Horan actually determines who's actually his number one goalkeeper. Mm. Be interested to see how Kieran Tracy goes actually at wing forward there. We haven't seen a lot of him. And I think it's interesting how pretty much everyone goes in this one tomorrow night, because back in Croke Park against Dublin for the first time since that epic in 2017. So it's like two of the heavyweights going toe-to-toe. I think it's going to be another cracker, to be honest with you, tomorrow night. But ultimately, it's just one of those things where you're just watching, you're like, this is good right now, but you can't really read too much into what actually happens, much like a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it only becomes a story if Dublin get relegated.
Could happen.
They lose
this weekend. It's a real danger. I think Mayo will play with an awful lot of emotion. I think the game will mean an awful lot to them. Everyone sees it as a chance to lay down a marker against Dublin. They have this giant target on their back, and they are operating at a level that was far below what we've seen from them, even in recent Allianz League campaigns. I'm not sure the logic behind the late start. They've never really started this late in the year, so they are a couple of weeks behind most other teams. I would fancy them to still be within a chance of winning. They have the improvements made from the Monaghan game right through to the game against Kerry and even beyond. It's chalk and cheese. They have got an awful lot better in recent weeks. It's not just even fitness-wise. They look a little bit more game intelligent. They've brought players back. The decision-making has improved an awful lot from where it was on that first night, that first day on Sunday against Monaghan a few weeks ago. But it would be hard to know where they are at this time of year. I think Owen made the point earlier, you don't read too much into it at this type of year. I think Mayo would read an awful lot more into beating Dublin than Dublin would read more into.
The last thing you need to be doing is to listen to anybody from Kerry when it comes to Yerraisms. Like, if the Dubs are going to start getting into Yerraisms, where, please don't go down that road.
Am I getting into Yerraisms?
Yeah, it's only February, it's only the league. Don't need to get too carried away. It's the constant old...
Well, at least it's taken Dublin people until a four in a row to actually get into Yerra territory. Currently on a zero in a row, I'm happy enough to go Yerra.
One quick one for you. Who the most arrogant and entitled county in the country is?
I can't say it, can I?
You can say whatever you want.
Sorry, Owen. It would historically be Kerry.
What do you mean historically? Has that changed?
Well, yeah, because I don't think you've anything to back up the arrogance anymore. Well,
you can still have a sense of it. I mean, it's almost more arrogant.
There's only one county, you know, who's just pulled off a five in a row.
But that doesn't mean they're arrogant and entitled, though.
That's true.
It just means they're winning.
It's only minor.
It's not arrogance, okay? It's just recognition of our own greatness.
Cork, though. Cork would be right.
I would 100% go with Cork. No question about it. We just don't hear too much from them at the minute because they're not winning anything. But there's a quiet arrogance and entitlement there that's ready to bubble over at any given opportunity.
Probably the reason why they're such a successful sporting county.
They are hugely successful, in fairness to them. Across so many different
levels. I'm sure like Roy Keane has that Cork arrogance, and that's helped him on his way in terms of keeping the determines in an English dressing room. I'm sure all their sports people have that sense of arrogance. I think it's something you need to... I think you need to stop hitting the word arrogance with this negative brush that you two boys have.
It's an inferiority complex more than an arrogance. It's a kind of a... They think that the world doesn't rate them as highly as they should be rated. It's a, we are going to prove you all wrong.
That's an interesting take on it. That's, I would have thought it was actually the opposite.
A bit of insecurity is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's... Same he all write us off. Wait till we show you how good we are.
What's your take on if Mayo won an All-Ireland? Will you smile or not?
No, I won't smile.
See, that's my point, Adrian.
No, but he won't smile because he wants Dublin to win it, whereas, like, that's not really
no,
fair.
I think, as a singular thing.
I wouldn't mind a different county winning that wasn't Dublin. I couldn't begrudge every county in the country.
So who,
but I probably wouldn't want Mayo to win.
So who is not Dublin?
If it was one of the non-traditional strong teams that win All-Ireland.
No, but, like, it has to be either Kerry, Mayo, you know yourself.
Why does it have to be? Why can't Galway make a breakthrough? They made it to an All-Ireland semi-final last year. Why can't they get to a final?
Like that's kind of my point. It's like I think you can select a huge host of counties, and just because Mayo has like the longest drought of the division, not all the Division One teams, but a lot of the Division One teams, they suddenly kind of there's this thing that people will be most happy to see them win.
Of course they would, though. Like, of course they would. Right, we've agreed that Cork are the most entitled, and just ahead of Kerry. What are you going to kick us off with, Darren?
Sean Cronin set to be included in the starting 15 when Joe Schmidt names his Ireland team a little bit later today to face Italy in Sunday's Six Nations clash. Jack Carty couldn't make his test debut. The Connacht man is set to be included on the bench. It appears unlikely that Joey Carberry will get a start at 10, with reports suggesting he's picked up a knock in training this week. Johnny Sexton will continue at out half with Carty there as cover. Peter O'Mahony is set to captain the side with Sean O'Brien and Geordie Murphy likely to start. O'Brien could be playing in his final Six Nations campaign. The Tullow Tank joins London Irish next season, and he hasn't given up hope of playing for Ireland beyond that.
If I'm fit and well, and I think I can add value to this group even after I leave Leinster, I'd hope to be selected. But again, that's so long away, and it's probably a decision that the coaches and whoever is in charge at the time will have to make. But you know, there's always hope there. I think that regardless of where you are, you're still in with a shout. You're playing well enough.
Now, Shamrock Rovers hope to make it back-to-back wins in the SSE Airtricity League later. They face a Derry side who opened their season by taking 3 points. Liam Buckley, Sligo Rovers, take on his former side, St Pat's. There's a derby at Belfield where UCD host Bowes. Champions Dundalk hope to get a win at the second attempt after a draw in their opening match. They make the trip to Finn Harps. Shelburne start their promotion campaign, they hope, in the first division against Galway away tonight. Elsewhere, Cabin Teely are up against Bray Wanderers from 7:45. Drogheda play Cove Ramblers. Athlone Town take on Wexford, and it's Limerick meeting Longford Town. Chelsea and Arsenal are both through to the last 16 of the Europa League. Mauricio Sarri's side beat Malmo 3-0 at Stamford Bridge to progress 5-1 on aggregate. Arsenal overturned a first leg defeat at the hands of Bate Borisov. They lost 1-0, but a 3-0 victory gave them a 3-1 aggregate win last night. Celtic have bowed out of the competition after a 1-0 defeat in Valencia saw them lose 3-0 on aggregate. Rangers say they will do everything possible to stamp out the type of abuse aimed at Kilmarnock boss Steve Clark during Wednesday's Scottish Cup tie. Clark said he faced sectarian abuse from the dark ages at Ibrox as his side lost 5-0 in their last 16 replay. The Scottish FA say they will seek further discussions with government and the police in light of the recent incidents. In a statement, Rangers said, "We wish to make it clear that unacceptable behaviour will not be tolerated at Ibrox." Clark claims after the Kilmarnock captain Chris Boyd was subjected to sectarian abuse as well during last Sunday's game with Celtic. A word of warning, some viewers might find the language used in this clip offensive.
They can call me a bastard or a wanker. No problem, thanks guys. No problem. But they call me a Fenian bastard. Come on. We're living in the dark ages. They're not allowed to call my sister a black bee. Yeah, but they can call me a Fenian bastard. That's correct? Is that correct? What are we doing in Scotland? You know, I wake up almost... I wake up every morning. And I thank Chelsea for coming and taking me away from the west of Scotland, because my children don't understand this. They don't have anything to do with this. My children have nothing to do with it. They don't understand. So thankfully, when I go down there, my children, my grandchildren, they don't need to worry about this. So, fantastic to be back in Scotland.
Jesus, powerful, isn't it?
Quite hard to listen to, isn't it? Mm. Very emotional. Obviously, this is the worst part. Is it's something that it seems to have endured over a long time.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's grim in so many ways, and it's the thing that he's been obviously away from there for a while, and probably a lot of people. I mean, Neil Lennon has obviously spoken at length about this exact thing. Who have spent a lot of time in Scotland, you almost become to a degree institutionalised, and it becomes like wallpaper at a certain point. But he's been away. He's come back. And he's hearing it, and now he's saying this is unacceptable, and he's absolutely spot on.
Yeah, fair play to him. I'd like to know exactly how that's kind of transformed over the last few years, whether or not those kind of chants are actually getting worse over the past couple of years with everything that's going on. Like, I'd be quite interested to hear that. And fair play to Steve Clark for coming out and actually saying that, and put so well as well.
Yeah.
Thank you to Chelsea for taking me out of this country, kind of depicting it as what is quite often a horrible place. And I'm sure from his perspective, it's just a terrible experience. And the more this sort of stuff is highlighted, the better. The thing is, I'm sure those people who are actually calling him that aren't really listening to that. They perhaps even feel more empowered by this.
The hardest part for me to listen to as well is the fact that he seemed to have some degree got used to it himself. He knew this was a problem. He knew this was something he was likely to face. But the part that breaks his heart, obviously, is what it does to his kids and the fact they can't get their head around why there is so much hate and bigotry still in 2019. It's hard to listen to. It's hard to get your head around that that's something that he's had to endure for... I mean, before he left for Chelsea, that was something that he had to endure. It's shocking, and hopefully something like that, that powerful message, might be something that will bring forth the sea change, or even a way where zero tolerance is taken towards it, because he made the point that it's not treated or taken as seriously as racism. Why not? Mm. It's as bad.
Absolutely.
Now, the disrespect shown by GAA players towards the national anthem is to be raised at a meeting of the GAA's Ard Corla this weekend. The Westmeath Examiner report that a delegate from Castle Pollard Hurling Club has highlighted the issue at a meeting of the county committee this week. Mick Macken is very unhappy with what he labelled as the unbelievable disrespect shown by players who don't remove their helmets during Hour on Aveen. He also feels it's not right to walk away before the song finishes playing. Westmeath County Board PRO Donnie Malone told Shannonside Radio they're going to raise the matter at national level. They want the GAA to do more to ensure that respect is paid to the anthem.
What a lot of absolute grade A guff.
You're not having it? You don't
it's
think?
It's nonsense. Occupy your time with something that matters. Who cares? Put your helmet on, take it off, show respect, whatever. Whatever. Like, who cares? There's also a long tradition of the GAA of people clapping and roaring right in the middle of the anthem. Who cares? Like, is there nothing else? Like, Jesus Christ, particularly in Westmeath, we have other things to be concerned ourselves about the state of our county sports than worrying about this bullshit. Jesus.
Some people get very irked by the fact that people put their arms around one another for the national anthem as well. And people want to get back to the old traditional value of, you know, you go down and you find a fella you're marking and you sing the national anthem louder than him.
Yeah, but like also we're not living in America. We're not, there's no militarization of... Maybe we're getting there of these national days or the national day out or whatever when it comes to the All-Ireland or to significant GAA matches. Like, who cares? Let's not go down this road where we have to be staring at you. Did you twitch there in the middle of the anthem? Did you twitch?
It's not that bad. Twitching. Is it not fair to want to observe a bit of respect for your national
anthem? Who cares?
Anthem? Just take off your, you take off your hat of the
leave
national
it on.
Anthem,
like
I
the.
You would you? Would you do
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you would, yeah.
I'd be interested to guess Declan Rice's second list, who thought the national anthem was catchy.
I'm sure
he's disgusted by Westmeath hurlers wearing helmets.
Rory McIlroy leads the way after day one of the WGC Mexico Championship. The Ulsterman carded an 8-under par opening round of 63. That's left him one shot clear of Dustin Johnson, and McIlroy very pleased with his opening day's work.
It felt pretty stress-free. I wouldn't say it was easy. I mean, I hit a lot of good golf shots. But yeah, I left myself, you know, a lot of tap-ins for birdies and, you know, had a nice eagle on the first hole as well, our 10th hole of the day. So, yeah, I mean, they were, as 63s go, you know, I shot 63 at Riviera last week, but this felt probably a little more stress-free. I'm managing my game well. I love where my attitude's at. My attitude on the golf course is fantastic, and my putting is good. You know, I've seen some really good signs of my putting over the last few weeks. You know, I had three really good putting rounds at Riviera the last 3 days, carried it into here. So if I'm excited about anything with my game, it's my putting and my attitude have been probably the best they've been in a long time.
I love where my attitude is at is a phrase I'm going to repeat to myself on a daily basis to make myself feel better about life. That's Rory McIlroy. Darren, thanks a million.
Well, I think laughing at a fella for his post-match comments is a bad attitude.
Darren, thanks for coming.
Yeah, it's a bad attitude, Adrian. Got to work on where your attitude's at.
It's all about the Ireland-Italy game this weekend in Rome on Sunday. We're going to talk to Ronan O'Gara and to Alan Quinlan in just a moment's time. The 15 for the game, obviously not revealed just yet. It'll be out this afternoon, but there is news in the papers this morning that reports that Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray will be our halfback pairing. Keith Wood was on Wednesday Night Rugby this week, and here he is on whether or not Johnny Sexton should change his ways.
What we're trying to do is have a discussion over what puts us in the best position possible come World Cup time, which we know is the exact same thought process that Joe Schmidt's having with more information than we're having, right? So, and he has set out his stall of what he likes and who he likes and how they like to play. I think ultimately he'd like Joey Carberry to have a little bit more of the control that Johnny has, but still keep that bit of a spark or the ability to accelerate onto a ball, and which we don't see as much of from Johnny anymore. And that's fine and right, by the way. And when we're talking about changing to not give that pass, I want him to give that pass and get creamed at it, and we win a World Cup on the back of it. We score in the last couple of minutes and he goes off. Then I think that's an acceptable time to get hurt and go off. But I can tell you every player that goes past 30, and I played for 2 years past 30. I retired, you know, just shy of my 32nd birthday. You change your game because you change so that you can be more effective. Mm. And it's funny how people would say it's self-preservation and all that. It's not. It's about effectiveness on the field. If you're a better team with you on the field, you want to stay on the field, you want to do more, you want to do different types of things, you want to bide your time when you need to, you want your game moments to be magic, to lead to scores, to lead to huge changes in a game. Johnny Sexton does that all the time. There's no criticism of that fact because he just does it all the time. The problem is when he does it, he often gets battered and goes off the field. I still want him on the field. So whatever it's not even a mindset change, whatever the structural change for how he goes about the game to keep him on the field for 75 minutes, I'd rather that than 25. That's all I'm saying.
You can check out that full piece up on our YouTube channel. Alan Quinlan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Adrian.
Ronan O'Gara is on the line as well. We'll pick up that point, lads, to begin with, if we can. Ronan, we'll come to you on it first, just about the opportunity for Johnny Sexton to, as Keith puts it, to change his game to protect himself.
Yeah, I suppose from Johnny's point of view or from a number 10's point of view, it just doesn't come into the equation, Adrian. I think, you know what I mean? He got a bad shot against Scotland, but you look at some of the clips, which an awful lot of the backs are getting hit in throughout Six Nations, our club rugby. A lot of fellas are getting belted. So, you know, this was a great power play they played. He took the ball to the line and, yeah, the Scottish prop followed through and buried Johnny. But that happens at rugby. I don't think he's getting special treatment. I don't think he's been targeted more frequently than he has been in the last 6-8 years. So in that regard, I think it's business as usual as far as I'm concerned. I don't really get what the big drama is about.
Yeah, I think the point that he's making, to try and paraphrase him correctly, is not so much that he's getting any special treatment, but more almost that he needs to manage himself. So, like, to use that example,
yeah,
of the
exactly.
Stockdale tribe.
What he's basically saying that he wants Johnny to be effective and efficient, and of course he does, and you do change your game, but like, sometimes 33 sounds old, but then when you're the guy in that body, I can remember as 34, you're quite a competitive animal as well. You don't think that you have to play off the line or anything like that. So,
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's not as if this guy has shaky bones or anything. It doesn't operate like that. At 33, you're in serious good nick. So, you know what I mean? There is probably an argument on what we've seen in 2019 that maybe his speed is down. But the only place you can really prove that is in the gym. And when you get speed tested, but like athletes with the training and with the rehab and with the, I suppose, performance directors out there these days, fellas can easily improve to 35 years of age in strength and in speed. It's proven fact.
Yeah. And he can't be seen, Quinny, almost to be taking a step back from his own point of view. He can't be seen to be thinking, I'm going to get rid of this ball a second earlier to protect myself from his own.
Yeah, but I think the older he's got, he's obviously his game has improved, and that's what he wants to do. He's a real competitive player, and he's a physical player, and he likes that, and he wants to challenge people and run with the ball himself. Some fly halves sit in the pocket a little bit more, and he wants to be involved and really challenging that line, and that's brought him incredible success in the teams he's played with, and the back line, the players outside him, because he's a real threat with the ball. But he says he's not going to change his game, and it's his choice, and it's the way he wants to play. And Woody's point is kind of relevant, that we'd all on the outsider just like to see him protected a little bit more and probably not be so confrontational, but you can't take that out of the person, and that's part of what makes him who he is.
Some Carberry injured, obviously, Rona, certainly is the word from some sort of an injury this week, and so he doesn't start, and it's Sexton and Murray. How important is it to that partnership?
Say that again, sorry, Adrian.
Carberry, it seems, is injured. That certainly the reports today that Carberry has picked up some sort of a knock in training, so whether he was going to start or not, it seems from the reports anyway, it was never really in question. But how important for you that Murray and Sexton start this weekend, a partnership that hasn't always hummed like we've seen it in the past?
Yeah, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of Joey Carberry got injured. That's a pity now, because he's obviously putting heat on Johnny, you know, and I think genuine heat on him, and that'll make the team better, because the more fellas you have breathing down your neck, the better you play. I'm convinced of that. So,
would you have started Carberry this weekend, sorry to cut across, if he was fit?
That's a good question. I was kind of humming and hawing in my head which way I'd go on that. But I think if I was in Irish camp and I was Johnny, I would be like a dog if I didn't start, because you haven't played much minutes this Six Nations campaign and actually in 2019. So it doesn't matter what your name is. You still need to be putting performances in, and Johnny would be keen to find kind of his rhythm again. And I think it is a good opportunity in terms of the key ingredient at this level too is confidence. And no matter who you are, you can lose that at certain stages of your career. I'm not saying Johnny has lost it, for people that might be suggesting that, but what I am saying is that it is really important that I think Ireland are the aggressors on Sunday, and they actually take this game by the scruff of the neck, and they add the rhythms of the game, as opposed to, you know, Italy at home, and or could be a bit fraught for 60 minutes. I wouldn't think that would be the mindset of the Irish team this week.
Yeah, and a lot written, obviously, about, I mean, the partnership and about Murray specifically and the form that he's in. And what's your assessment of that entire thing? Do you read it like everybody else? Because, like, the out-of-form thing is such a catch-all phrase that I'm sure for people on the inside, it's not as clear-cut as that. But what's your assessment of Murray and where he's at?
Yeah, well, I think Conor isn't hopping off the ground for me for, I suppose, a long period of time. He was playing the best rugby any scrum half in the world was, and I genuinely felt that. You sometimes, you know, I mean, world class is thrown around, but Conor Murray is world class. At the minute, his form probably isn't world class. He's off that, but I think what you probably don't, or you just give the guys that are like him the benefit of the doubt that they will find form. You know what I mean? I don't think the solution with someone like Conor is having a look at what are the other options there to see. We know he's the best option there. That is without a shadow of a doubt. So what is missing? Is it his kind of skills are letting him down? Is it the structure of the team that's letting him down? Or basically, is his mindset? Does he need to get a little bit hungrier, or has he a niggling injury that's playing in his mind, or is there something that isn't quite right at the minute? Is his normal training routine exactly the same as it is every week? Is he down on a weight or a skill session? Is that affecting his form, or is there absolutely nothing to it and he just probably hasn't executed his skills as he'd like to? The number nine, his box kicking is probably, instead of a 9 out of 10, he's probably, you know what I mean, 6 to 7 out of 10 at the minute. But I think that happens, you know. I think for the guys that are lucky enough to play over a sustained period of time, it's very, very rare you don't have a dip in form, or you don't get a dose of the yips now and then in your career.
Gordon Darcy was saying this week, Ronan, that in Michael Checa's last season, they went after perfection quite a bit, that they'd been quite successful the season before that. And instead of just kind of resting on their laurels, they obviously tried to make another step up. And that quest of perfection can sometimes have pitfalls, that you're not really in a flow state anymore. Is there anything to that? Is there anything we can read into that with this this Ireland team so far? Or is it just a sense that there's a bit of rustiness in the halfback positions in particular?
I don't know. It's a good question. But I think, you know, I think this team has been more successful than other Irish teams. So these are kind of the guys setting the pace now. So, you know, stuff that Darce did with Leinster is probably incomparable to probably playing at the test level, when these guys have been on longer runs than that Leinster team were on. So I think it's very important you're comparing like with like, or making an accurate description of what is going on. But I think, yeah, I can see the point about flow and rhythm and, you know what I mean, paralysis by analysis and looking for perfection. We know that doesn't exist in rugby, but I think, especially the two halfbacks, I would think they're smart enough to realise the little tweaks they need to make in their own game for the quest for more consistent or more competent performances on an ongoing basis.
With obviously some of the players that have been rested, Rory Best obviously is probably one of the main ones that needs a bit of a break, and according to the reports, it's Sean Cronin who comes in his place. I was astonished. I couldn't believe it, to read it again, that this is going to be his first, after 68 caps, his first Six Nations start.
I know, it's unbelievable.
Really, isn't it?
It's incredible.
Wow.
To think, you know, he's been involved with the team for years now and hasn't got those opportunities. And yeah, a lot of times there's been people question that. Incredible. Sometimes been such a good impact player off the bench, and for one reason or another hasn't got those opportunities with Ireland. But
what's your take on why that is?
Sometimes the lineup thrown hasn't been perfect, and there's been a lack of confidence maybe in the coaches and the national setup as opposed to Leinster. Rory Best has been very consistent and very good for a number of years now, so it's been hard to kind of knock him off that top perch.
Yeah, I come in. I think that's the key point, isn't it? I think, Adrian, for the balance of the squad, it's a really simple one. Like, Cronin is incredible impact from the bench. Best, he just doesn't get injured, and he's incredibly durable, and he's has a big engine as well on him, and his probably leadership role has always been very impressive. So it is, yeah, it's very interesting, your statistic, though. His first start, if it is to be. But there has been other hooker start in terms of not Rory Best. You know, you have Niall Scanlon, wasn't it, who was the guy in, was it in Italy 2 years ago? Or sorry, in France, he came in at late notice, wasn't he, for Rory Best?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do wonder if this election confirms Cronin almost as number two, and, you know.
Yeah, well, look, it's hard to know. I think Niall Scannell will certainly be in the mix. James Tracy and the Ulster hooker, he's going to kill me. The number two. Jeez.
Come to us in a minute.
We're all gone blank on that one. He'll kill us.
What was the question?
We're
just debating other options.
Drawn a blank on who the replacement Ulster hooker is. We'll come back to it in a second. But the capacity to, so that Irish front row, the normal Irish front row, and its capacity.
Rob Herring.
We can rely on the out half to
Rob Herring is going to kill us. We need a fly half in New Zealand to remind us about. He's a great player, and he did really well in Australia as well with Scandal.
That Irish front row's capacity to churn out quick ball right from the scrum has been a feature. So, like, how impacted are we by those tweaks? Because, like, you're sort of alluding to the fact that Cronin's strengths are not necessarily those technical, you know, he's probably one of the best hookers in the loose, but, you know, his capacity to hook, I suppose.
You see, he's suffered because he's been such an impact player and such a dynamic player around the field that sometimes, you know, people have focused on maybe some of the weaknesses a little bit more and used him as a stick. But, like, you can see his performances for Leinster have been phenomenal, scrummaging-wise and line-out-wise. So sometimes a little bit unfair, you get that tag of an impact player, and he's had that tag with Ireland.
I think it's quite obvious, in fact, that, like, from a selector's point of view or a management point of view, like, Rory Best is the captain. So, like, you know what I mean? It's very hard to, from a practical point of view, to bring him in to start ahead of your captain. Like, cause there aren't that many test matches every year. I understand the rotation and giving him a go, but, like, it's pretty simple when you look at it from that point of view, that Rory Best is the captain, so he starts.
Just we're a bit screwed if he gets injured, right, is the point that, like, you talk about...
No, I wouldn't think so. I think it's actually a position of strength. I think there is... contrary to what you might think, I think it's people that have been given an opportunity there, they've been good. So I think Scandal has been impressive in his all-round game. As Quinny said, like, Sean Cronin for Leinster is a very, very impressive full-package hooker.
Back row, if the team is to be believed, Jordy Murphy comes in the place of Jack Conan and must be pretty peeved, I mean, unless he's picked up some sort of an injury.
Yeah, and this is the problem with the game being Sunday. We don't have a team. It's speculation. And if I was Jack Conan and I wasn't injured, I'd be very disappointed. But Jordy Murphy, on the other hand, then you're giving him an opportunity and you're kind of looking at that depth chart again. But there's not going to be that many opportunities between here and those World Cup warm-up games. So it'll be interesting to see that. Sean O'Brien, again, I think Sean obviously needs games, and it'd be great to see him kind of have a few bullocking runs around the field against Italy on Sunday, and that'll kind of stand him in good stead going into the last kind of block of games. And Josh van der Fleer, you could say, is unlucky as well, you know what I mean, from where he was...
Potentially is the back row?
It looks like Peter O'Mahony, Jordy Murphy and Sean O'Brien. That's the speculation from the papers, but we'll wait and see. Look,
on the Peter O'Mahony, because you mentioned the leadership thing a bit earlier, Ronan, the Peter O'Mahony question. So if this is the team and he captains them, I'm interested to get both your opinions on a player who obviously is quite prone to have the engine overheat at times in that captaincy role. Both your takes on that?
Alan, start.
The engine overheat. Well, I've been prone to have my own engine overheat at times over the years, but...
Your diesel engine.
Diesel engine, yeah. You were more of a petrol man. But look, I tell you, he's... he plays right on the line, Peter, and he has that emotion, but he's... I think he's learned to cope and adapt as the years have gone on. He's grown into that captaincy role at Munster and is a really important leader in the team. So,
but if he's losing the plot, as he can do, right? He's done it in this Six Nations and he's up in the referee's grill in a way that he shouldn't be, and he's getting involved with players. Like, there's any amount of clips of him using choice language.
When did he lose the plot, Adrian?
He had a bit of a pop off, was it Sinclair in the England game?
But you, what, that's exactly what you want him to do.
As captain, though?
Yeah.
Are you suggesting Johnny Sexton should be captain?
But he wasn't captain on that occasion, so he's fully entitled to do that.
So he dials it down when he's captain?
I think most definitely. I think there would be different behaviours or mannerisms. I think his approach all week, if you know you're captain, it's different. But, like, to be fair, you know what I mean? I think of all the guys in a white jersey that there, it was easy to pick who was going to rile him. And I'd say you give Sinclair the exact same reaction yourself, Adrian, even if you were warned by Schmidt all week.
I wouldn't.
You would.
I think there's a trust there. Joe trusts him and trusts him to lead the team if he needs to. He's been vice-captain. Sexton himself have been vice-captain for a while now under Rory Best and their leader. So, as Rod said, it'll be a little bit calmer. Obviously, if you're named as captain and you're going to have a relationship that you're going to be speaking with the referee for 80 minutes, it's a little bit different. Sometimes it can have a kind of opposite effect. If you're not captain and you're very confrontational, that you might get a bit frustrated, and then the referee can say, well, he shouldn't be talking to me because he's not captain. So Peter plays kind of, he has that that emotion. I think he's grown into it. There's always a case where, you know, he can be right in your face, but that's not a bad thing. I think against England, if there was any criticism of Rory, I wanted him to be stronger for that, you know, on a few occasions with Garces. And but look, it's a fine line. I think there's no issues with him. With him being captain, I think he's done a great job for Munster over the years and for Ireland when he's got the job.
We're all expecting that we get back to some sort of, like, it's a perfect game in a lot of ways for Ireland, pre-says out, to get back to some of those changes notwithstanding, get back to the form that we spoke about, sort of the halfback partnership humming a bit earlier on, to get back humming this weekend.
I'm trying to figure this out myself. What's a good result? Because my experience of Italy and is, you beat them really well, people say it's only Italy, and you struggle against them, and then they there's a big reaction to it. And I'd be interested to know what you think of that, Rog. Come 5 o'clock on Sunday evening, what would you be pleased with if you were playing on the team coming out of the Stadio Olimpico on Sunday evening? What would be your ideal scenario, given that everyone thinks we're going to win, which you've got to be careful with, but the Ireland win, what's the perfect scenario leaving the stadium?
I think, for me, what I'd like to see, obviously, would be a high-tempo, really positive body language game. What do I mean by that? I mean kind of Ireland being the aggressors, taking the initiative and going after them. Like, so, you know, I mean, if Italy kick long or Italy kick go, you try and run them off their feet, essentially. Just play that game where we're retaining ball and you're actually... you know what I mean? I think obviously the game will be structured and be a massive focus on the ruck, but can we play the ball out of the tackle a little bit more and essentially scoring tries by putting them through phases? You know, it's not so long ago that this game in the States, I was present at that game and it was such a mismatch, and it was incredible when we saw, I suppose, the birth of Jordan Larmour.
You were on the old freebie out there.
I was trying to concentrate, but just stop. I looked at it, obviously, Ireland lost to Italy in 2013, which is frightening in some regard. But it was also good, and I was only slagging Sean O'Brien. Sean O'Brien beat the All Blacks. I never beat the All Blacks, but I never lost Italy. I said to Shawnee lost Italy. So in that regard, that's not so long ago. But I actually don't think Italy are a realistic threat of getting a result. So you're asking what's a good performance. I think a good performance is when kind of Ireland have emptied the tank and gone after them. I think we all are aware of what's coming in rounds 4 and 5, but like if there is probably a dull performance mentally this weekend, it will be hard to get momentum for the final. Right? Why, if you kicked away the cobwebs this weekend, I reckon there could be very big excitement for rounds 4 and 5.
I think the same, and I think for me, probably you're talking about the attacking scenario, Rog, which always gives a feel-good factor when you leave. But for me, it's not conceding sloppy tries. We conceded a couple of sloppy scores against them last year, and even though we beat them 56-19 in Dublin, you just got a sense that, you know, and Keith Earls had that great recovery where he saved another try. So I would love to see Ireland being really robust, aggressive, on the front foot. Not necessarily playing really loads of expansive rugby, but just being really aggressive and ruthless and not conceding sloppy scores. And then you can build to the last block against France and Wales.
And we have Wales and England, obviously, on Saturday to look forward to as well, Saturday late afternoon. So to get your thoughts on this one, it's Eddie Jones saying that this is the greatest Welsh team of all time. And then I read Jonathan Davey saying that England are the best team on the planet at the minute. So how is this one going to play out? Because it's got such interesting consequences for ourselves, obviously.
Yeah, I have a feeling that because of where England are coming from, they're full of confidence and belief now, and they're a very powerful physical side, that they might maybe too strong for Wales. Wales are full of confidence. They're on a record winning run of matches, and it's always tricky going to Cardiff. You know, they won't need any motivation to get up for this. You just sense for England, this is a game that they can really make a big statement, because if you're in a team that's gone to Dublin and gone to Cardiff and won in the first three rounds of the championship, well, you deserve to be talked about and you deserve to get a lot of recognition from that. We always say over the years, when Rog probably agree, the two big games were England and France away. That year was always going to be tricky to win a championship, because you're going to Paris and you're going to London. For England to go to Dublin and to go to Cardiff, well, they'll deserve a Grand Slam, and they'll get a Grand Slam if they win on Saturday. I just sense that they're too powerful and that they've completely flipped this around now. But you never know. Wales will be really up for this game, but I just don't know if they're good enough and powerful enough to stop them.
Conor O'Shea was obviously saying on the show this week that there was a huge overreaction from an Irish perspective to what happened in Dublin a couple of weeks ago. Like, I wonder, by the same token, like the likes of Jonathan Davies saying that England are the best team in the planet, Ronan, is there an overreaction in that as well?
Yeah, I don't know. It was an overreaction. I think if you were in the stadium that day in the Aviva to see what England did to Ireland, I think it shook a lot of us. So maybe if you're in the ground, you might get a different feeling from it. So I wouldn't necessarily agree with Conor in that regard. I thought England deserved immense credit for what was a complete performance for 80 minutes. If you can't kind of compliment that from a rugby point of view, I think you're missing, or else you're not seeing maybe the game as it should be seen, because they were unbelievably impressive for that 80 minutes. And then they backed it up, obviously, against France. An overreaction to it? No, I think there's hope in the fact that there isn't a test venue in the world like, I suppose, the Millennium Stadium when Wales play there. But also, you know, Vunipola and Maka and Itoje out. That quality, you don't have like-for-like places.
Roger, replacements. What do you think of Anscombe starting at 10? I know you work for the... for the first Wales-France game, and they started with Anscombe and Thomas Williams, and Davies and Bigger came on and seemed to change the game. So Anscombe over Bigger, I think that's kind of divided opinion. I was looking at a lot of stuff online during the week. Would you start Anscombe against England or Bigger? Is it a mistake?
Oh, I don't think it's a mistake. I think why they're playing Anscombe, I think it's got to do with strategy. I think they... obviously, you've spent time under Warren. I think what their big philosophy is that they're the fittest rugby team in the world. So they put so much emphasis on that, and they're going to go. They won't kick the ball out. They won't give England line out. So the ball and play time will be huge, and they're going to back their fitness. And I think they look at Anscombe, in fairness to him, he's a lovely runner, and he's very at ease from obviously being raised in New Zealand with the ball in hand, and his running game is very good. So they're going to look to, I think, play with a lot of wit on Saturday. And it's been kind of, I suppose, for the last 12 months, he's been their man at 10, so they're showing faith in him. And I get that, but I suppose what I also get is the fact that Bigger is a serious competitor. And I think when he's kind of has been kind of put in the ball corner, he's always have a positive reaction. So probably got it out of them. And the Italian game was a poor game, but Bigger definitely added something, and he was better that day. And in France, he was impressive as well. So the reality of rugby nowadays, Quinny, is that you're probably going to have a guy playing probably 50, 55 minutes max, and you're looking for massive impact then from Bigger.
In a world,
I don't know enough about it. He got injured for Northampton. Is that an was he able to train the latter, or the early part of this week? Teams like to kind of have uninterrupted preparation and test week, and if there's very little between two of your players, the guy who's kind of 100% fit will always get the nod, Adrian.
In a word, who wins it? Both of you?
For me, England.
Yeah, England as well. That'd be my concern. Anscombe is a great player, brilliant attacking player, but I just think Farrell, Tua Lange, Tom Curry, if they harass him the way that they put that pressure on the Ireland halfbacks, that's exactly what they'll try and do. I hope they don't kick the letter off the ball this week. 47 kicks against France.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. So hope, but look, that'll be a great game to watch. There'll be a real bite to that. An incredible stadium to play in.
Ronald, you hung on last weekend?
Yeah, we did. We did. We left Killer Instinct. We were 12-3 up, had a penalty, and went to the corner. Ball didn't go to the corner. So just a little bit rusty on the first day out. Didn't put them away, and in fairness to the Blues, they're under new management. A lot of good individuals. They got a lot of, I suppose, better team patterns, and they were they hung in there, and they were on the ropes for a bit, but they were unlucky not to get the result. I think, in fairness, if the Blues had won, you couldn't say that they were lucky. So got a few key learnings from it, and we're looking forward to. This time tomorrow night, we'll have finished playing the Hurricanes.
Is it the biggest rivalry? The New Zealand Hurl suggests so. The biggest rivalry in New Zealand?
The biggest rivalry for two Munster players in New Zealand, because you'll be going up against Jason Holland, won't you?
Dutchie. I realise. Yeah, he's playing mind games with me already. He wouldn't come over. My mum and dad are here. He wouldn't come over and have dinner with us tonight. So he said he'll see me for breakfast. So we'll see.
He's keeping the head down.
Great guy, great brain about the game, and yeah, it's brilliant. This week we play the Hurricanes, which obviously Jason Holland, and then next week we go play the Reds, where Tony McGahan is. So small world.
You were also meeting up with another old friend during the week as well. Some nice shots of yourself and Dan Carter doing the rounds.
Even you were impressed with Dan, Adrian. You were.
He's a handsome man, Ronan. What can I say? You know,
he had a nice suit, didn't he?
Looking sharp.
Yeah, he sure was.
He's gone back. He's coming back to French rugby.
Did you manage to get a few corporate gigs in during the week?
Sorry, someone's after bombarding the studio, Adrian. Is there?
Yeah. We've a tug arrived in. Here, listen, we'll wrap it up on that. We'll chat to you again soon. Thanks a million, Ron.
Cheers.
Good luck tomorrow.
See
Thanks
you.
A lot.
Cheers, Roger.
Ron O'Gara on the line there from Christchurch ahead of the weekend of rugby, and an interesting weekend as well. I wanted to let him go because we had an interesting conversation earlier on about it was on the back of Liverpool and a sense of entitlement and arrogance. Am I doing the conversation justice so far, Owen?
Yeah.
And we landed on the idea that Cork was, I mean, we voted to who were you voting for? You didn't actually commit one way or the other. The most arrogant
Basically,
and
they
entitled.
Were saying that Cork are the most arrogant
what,
county.
What were you saying? Who's the most arrogant and entitled county in Ireland?
I was just sticking up for Kerry when you were saying this.
But who get your vote?
I think Cork is a fairly good shout, to be honest. I think there's a huge amount of Dublin arrogance as well, no? Like, Halfdan couldn't even name the other 31 counties.
Yeah, what do you think?
You're not bringing me in that.
Tipperary would be,
not
be up there, wouldn't you?
We're very laid back and we've no arrogance
Cocky,
about us at all.
Cocky, arrogant. No?
Kilkenny and the hurling.
Oof. Good shout, yeah. It's a good shout.
Big time. The Cork people fancied themselves a little bit, all right. The Cork lads and the Munster squad I was in, yeah, they...
There is a bit, isn't there? Like,
there
that's
is
just
a bit of that,
it.
The Cork lads. Yeah,
would any of that have ever rubbed off on you inside the camp, where it's like, God, to actually feel like I'm on a level footing with these Cork lads, I need to bring a bit of arrogance to my own game?
Not really, but you know there was always a little bit of a clique there, and they kind of would look down their nose a little bit at you. You know, we're from Cork, it's great in Cork, everything is brilliant in Cork at times.
Or you're not from Cork, sort of thing.
I'm only a bogger from Tipperary.
Yeah. Thanks, William. Enjoy the games over the weekend.
Have a good weekend.
Vincent Wall is going to join us in the studio very shortly. There's some interesting sports business news that we're going to bring you away, so we'll do that in just a few minutes' time. Bellator's MMA card, meanwhile, is at the 3 Arena tomorrow night, and it's a sellout. Live on Sky Sports, the undercard will be live on the Bellator app, and we've been chatting to the headliner, James Gallagher, who's hoping to bounce back from a vicious KO loss.
It's going to be unbelievable. So it is. There's 8,400 or 600 tickets, I'm not sure, I can't remember the number, but from today. So there's only a couple hundred left. It's a packed out arena, and I'm looking forward to going out there on Saturday night and being the main event.
I'm very proud of him. I mean, 22 years of age. Name another 22-year-old with confidence like him, and the way he handles all of this stuff, do you know what I mean? And I've seen him come up. I actually gave him my shin pads the first day he came onto the pro team in SBG for his first ever sparring session. So to see him progress from that to this, it's been amazing, and I'm very proud of him. But we've come up on the small shows together, the amateur shows together, and we've always said it, that one day we are going to make it big, we are going to make that money, we are going to be on these big stages together and take over the world. And here we are now, this is it, my foot's in the door, my second fight in, and I look forward to what the future holds. But no doubt about it, I'll be working my arse off to make sure that I'm going to have a seriously impressive career, make as much money as possible, and get my way to becoming a world champion.
You know, it's fantastic. Bellator have invested so much in Irish fighters and coming here and putting on such a fantastic show and making a big deal about the talent that is in Ireland. You know, I've only heard positive things. I never really get any negative, you know, feedback or press about MMA. Everybody's always really positive up the north anyway, and down here. So I like to just see more females taking part. Like, I take ladies classes and we have like 30 women, and they're not going to be fighters. They're learning technique. They're coming and building a community and environment, and where they can come get confidence. You know, like, the girls love learning Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, they love learning striking, and they love learning all together, and that's what I really am passionate about.
Weak-minded people, unsuccessful people, people not happy within themselves. Successful people that are happy within themselves, are too focused on being successful to give a shit about what anyone else's failures. They don't care. But for me, it wasn't a failure. For me, that loss was not a failure. So it wasn't. It's actually a step forward. I learned so many different things that I didn't know before, and now I know them. So, dude, that's it. I'm a dangerous man now. I know something I didn't know back then, and that's a dangerous man coming.
I'm cold to him now. There was an emotional investment in this fight in the lead up to it. People know, I'm not going to explain it again, but people know what he's up to doing. I will explain it again. He Ireland's greatest sportsman was getting ready for the biggest moment of his career, and Miles spent his own money to travel 5,000 miles or 4,000 miles, whatever it is, to go and help his opponent. That's a traitor. He's a former teammate of Conor, so people know what he has done. I know what he has done. But to answer your question, I don't give a shit anymore. I'm cold to him now. When I'm in that ring, he's just going to be another fight for me. I'm just going to break him up, and that's it. There will be no emotional investment on the night, I think, is what you're getting at.
First round, rear neck choke. I'm going to bust him up bad with strikes. And if he's tough, the ref will drag me off him. And if he's a little bitch, he'll give me his back and I'll choke him.
James Gallagher, always a pleasure. Very much looking forward to Saturday night. Appreciate the time.
I appreciate it, mate.
That's the, it looks like the Viper wrapping things up there on the Bellator MMA card. It's James Gallagher, Kiefer Crosby, Liam McCourt and Peter Greeley. You can check out the undercard. We'll be live on the Bellator app over the weekend. We'll have another clip of that in just a minute. But before all of that, business correspondent Vincent Wall, good morning to you.
Morning, Andrew.
A couple of interesting stories we're going to talk about. First of all, the Nike stock, we mentioned a bit earlier on today, a bit of a mishap on the court, and the Nike stock is on the way down.
Yeah, I think everybody knows what actually happened now on Wednesday night, that within 30 seconds of the match starting, Zion Williamson shoe, and it was seemingly an ordinarily priced shoe, heavily branded, but seemingly this particular shoe cost something like $95.
Right.
But Zion Williamson has been wearing them for some time. It split, as we know, 30 seconds into the match, from heel to toe, and he got a knee sprain and left. But I suppose what's happened afterwards, so there's that sporting development, but what's happened afterwards is a huge response on social media, and the Nike share price fell by about just over 1%, but $2 billion written off the value of the Nike share price in the last 24 hours. Now, you know, will they be worried about this? Because in the past, Nike has quite openly and proactively courted controversy. So we know even as recently as last September, they had that controversial "Let's Do It" controversial ad campaign with Colin Kaepernick, the controversial American footballer, who the bend the knee campaign. They deliberately put that ad out there. Now, they had been a sponsor of his, but they deliberately put that out there, probably knowing it would influence the share price in the short term. The share price actually fell by 4% within hours of that ad going out last September. Wow. Down to about $79. So it's recovered in the past 5 or 6 months. So I think large corporations like that sometimes expect the share price to be affected, but take a longer term view of the value of the publicity. I'm not sure in this case. I think the share price will recover. It's only 1%. But in this case, it's an actual fundamental design flaw by the looks of it in their key product.
It's surprising almost on that basis that the share price hasn't fallen more.
Absolutely. That it is actually a design flaw. Now, they're saying it's rare. They're saying it's an isolated incident. But for it to happen in such a high-profile college basketball match with such a key piece of their kit, and companies like Nike, I mean, really strategically invest in college sports because that's where the stars come from. It has huge attendance, it has huge television coverage, as you know. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where the share price goes today because this isn't just a publicity stunt. This is actually a serious reputational issue.
And interesting to see if Nike themselves at some point come out and obviously respond to it. And we were debating earlier on about whether it was an opportunity, obviously, for some of the other major brands as well to come in and maybe sort
and
of...
Their competing share prices, their competing brand share prices are up slightly. And you can read too much into that as well.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the Nike share price down 1%, American share price is generally flat. So, you know, it wasn't too much out of the ordinary. It'd be interesting to see where it goes today, though, as the market actually absorbs what happened.
The one other thing we wanted to mention to you, an interesting interview on the show this morning, the FAI chief executive in.
Yeah, John Delaney, chief executive of the FAI, came into Breakfast Business at 6:30 on News Talk Radio, an early kickoff for John, as he told me himself. Yeah, he was in to talk about a couple of things, but basically they're going to formally launch their new multi-year premium ticket program for the Aviva Stadium next Wednesday. Now, I think we've known that they are going to try to sell 3, 5 and 10 year tickets. We knew the price from the AGM last August of, I think it's going to be 2,000 for 3 year tickets, 3,000 for 5 year tickets, and 5,000 for 10 year tickets. And that 5,000 for 10 year tickets compares with a range of 12 to 32,000 they originally tried to sell the last 10 year tickets at back in 2010. Now, the stadium was new. They did get a big British sporting organisation to try and sell them, but John Delaney acknowledged that they got it badly wrong.
Right.
So the highest priced tickets now for 10 years will be 5,000. What was new this morning, I think, is that they currently have 3,200 paying premium ticket members. There are actually 10,000 premium seats. Their target is to sell just under 4,000 of these new tickets, whether it be 3, 5 or 10 year, to raise about €12 million. That's their target, and that'll be announced next Wednesday. And that €12 million will, if they get it, will be bagged to eliminate or to help eliminate the debt on the Aviva Stadium by 2020. Currently, the FAI owes somewhere between 30 and €20 million, they're part of the debt on that.
Right, and the full piece, I'm sure, is up on newstalk.com.
It's up on
newstalk.com.
Check
it out, yeah. Vincent, thanks, William, for that. Vincent Wall, Newstalk, business correspondent there. So thanks, William, for that, Vincent. Enjoy the weekend. We have one more clip from that Bellator card that we want to bring your way. And this is Dublin's undefeated Kiefer Crosby, also on that Bellator card at the Three Arena tomorrow night. He spoke to Niall McGrath about what the event will mean for Irish fighters and what signing with Bellator has meant for his bank balance.
Hey, like, I've been thinking about this since I was a kid. I wanted to fight in the Point Depot when I was literally... a very small kid.
I went to a couple of boxing events there years ago, and I've said it in my head, I've said it out loud actually, I'm going to fight here someday, and I'd have people laughing and, you know, looking at me like I was fucking mad, but here I am now. This is my fourth time fighting in the Tree Arena, so this is like a second home to me now at this stage, but this one is big. This one feels big now. This is serious, like Sky Sports deal, and it's sold out officially. Man, this is nuts, you know what I mean? Bellator, huge platform, main card. Man, this is the stuff dreams are made of.
What's been the difference with Bellator and compared to obviously like Bama and getting matched?
They're a phenomenal show. They're world class. Do you get me? They're black belts when it comes to promotion and matching fights, and they don't mess around. They are great. They're phenomenal. Do you know what I mean? Mike, Scott, Jude, they're all just amazing people. So easy to work with, work for. They pay very well. I'm very happy with the pay, and I mean, all week we've just been looked after so well. Everything's just gone smooth. I've done all the shit shows from amateur all the way through. Like, I've been messed around, and the pullouts and the changes, and I've had a few nightmares, but this just feels amazing to me. Yeah.
Financially, is it a game changer?
Ah, mate, listen, life changer. Do you get me? Life changing. Seriously, I get to take care. My number one goal in life, forget about fighting, is to take care of my family. I have a small daughter who I love very much, a girlfriend, a mother, and them three people mean everything to me. So I get to literally take care of them financially, and that means everything to me, and I literally get to do what I love to do by doing that. So it's literally, my life has just come together perfectly. Do you get me? A few months ago I was on the social welfare, mate, contemplating what the fuck I was going to do with my life, and now here I am making mad money doing what I love to do. So I mean, my training has gone up, my living has just changed. I'm a fucking a monk when it comes to training martial arts now. Do you know what I mean? I've took this very serious, and I'm going to ensure that when I step in there, the whole world is going to know, oh, this lad is different, he's not the same as these people. Like, this is mega. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is mega. And in Ireland as well, I mean, this is literally just the biggest event I've ever been involved in, and anyways, in my whole life. And obviously going back to the UFC Dublin card and stuff, that was brilliant, you know what I mean, watching my teammates do so well, and McConnor's kicked in the door for us all, and we're just all kind of running in now and getting what we can and making our own names. And I mean, to be fighting on Bellator, a world renowned stage, and making legit money with my friends in Dublin, it's literally like a fucking movie or something. Do you know what I mean? All this media, it's crazy. I'm just embracing it and enjoying every minute of it, and I just can't wait to get in there Saturday night and feel that energy from my people and have all the cameras and just lap it up and enjoy it and look back the day after when I'm sculling a few donuts from my door or something like that and just take it all in and be like, okay, that was a mad scene. Because it does, it feels like a dream when you're out of the cage. When you step out, it's like, that was fucked up. Yeah, I don't really embrace it too much until afterwards, but when you look back, it hits you and it's like, whoa, that was mega.
All right, almost time for us to get out of here. Pretty busy day coming up across Off the Ball channels and over the weekend as well. The European Football Show back across your channels this afternoon, and that is our brand new show, which will react to a pretty hectic weekend of European football as well. Brian O'Driscoll is in studio tonight from 7 o'clock to preview Ireland, Italy, and I'm sure touch on Wales, England as well. The crappy quiz is going to be coming your way. And on Off the Ball over the weekend, Premier League Live is on Today FM on Saturday. That's Newcastle against Huddersfield in the company of Ian Beach and Stephen Elliott for that game. And then over on Off the Ball and News Talk on Sunday, it'll be Niall Kelly and Kieran Cunningham on the newspaper review from 1, and then Manchester United against Liverpool with Nathan and Kevin Caban. That is a five past two kickoff.
Yep.
And then it's an absolute nightmare, actually. If only the games had been the other way around, that the Ireland-Italy game would have been first up, so Ireland are 15, 20 points clear of Italy, and then you can justifiably and happily turn over to the United-Liverpool game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pain in the arse.
What are you going to do?
Clearly, I'm going to watch the start of the football. You're going to have to watch rugby.
Are you capable of dual screening?
Not really. I will do, but you just don't enjoy it. Like, you get nothing out of it.
Did it a lot during the World Cup last year. And I think it is possible if football's one of the games.
Yeah.
It is, but you need a fairly boring football game, and you need a commentator who's really boring for all the game. And then a chance happens and their voice picks up, so your attention diverts. Yeah. So, but
like, it might be possible for something like the World Cup in a way as well, that you're not as invested in the games. Like, everybody, you want to really get fully into both of these games.
Well, that's it. And also, it was GAA on the other screen. Whereas at rugby, like, you kind of need to look at every second, because the replays of every single moment are kind of important, and a new sort of piece of analysis might pop up. I just find you can't dual screen at rugby, full stop. It'd be grand if it was
like Scotland, France, or.
Yeah, if you're just interested in the scoreboards.
Exactly. Yeah. And are you going to anything over the weekend?
Nope.
Sporting-wise?
Nope.
Or anything otherwise?
Nope.
Dua Lipa or...
Nope. Nothing. Weekend plans are always just an absolute disaster whenever I kind of talk about them on a Friday.
So you are actually doing something, you're just not going to talk about it? Is that...
Yeah, we actually spoke about it last week. I'm surprised you've actually forgotten.
Damn it. What is it, Tommy? What was the... Tommy's distracted now.
It's poor recollection on your part, to be quite honest with you. So I think that's that, really, to be quite honest.
I'm devastated now. I can't remember that. But
where are you going for the weekend?
I will be... What do you mean?
What are you doing for the weekend?
I'm at a different stage of life, home, where my weekend plans are nowhere near as exciting as yours, unfortunately.
So what are you doing, minding the kids?
Bit of kids, yeah. Hang out with the kids.
If you can't dual screen, but you can mind kids and watch sport, then
it's impossible.
You can multitask.
It's really difficult to look after your children and try to fully... I was trying to watch the Liverpool-Bayern game during the week while putting my three-month-old to sleep, and it's just a disaster. Like, there's just no enjoyment to be had out of it. You can't fully concentrate in the game. Like, I appreciate that parenting is slightly more important, but it's different.
I'm glad you say you couldn't fully concentrate on putting the kid to bed.
That's not what I said. All right. Enjoy your weekend, whatever the hell it is you're doing. It's mysterious, and I'm sure it's going to be brilliant and amazing and all of those things. O2BAM is going to be back. You're back on Monday morning?
No, I'll be back Tuesday.
Oh, he's back on Tuesday. Where's he going? What's he doing? Tommy doesn't know either.
Yeah, that's incredible. You've actually...
You're away. You're flying away somewhere.
Everybody who's watching this, like, remembers the conversation we had last year. Last week, I should say. Remember you were trying to get, like, tourism tips for me and all that sort of thing.
Oh, he's going to Budapest.
Well done. At long last, you remember.
When are you flying out?
This afternoon.
Did you look into the Gellert Baths anymore?
No.
I highly recommend it.
I think after your... horror story of that last week.
There's nothing horrific about it. It's amazing. It's one of the best things you can do in Budapest. And they have a brilliant sports park as well, right in the middle of the river there.
I'll make sure to check that out if you want to send me on any tips. I'll do that. I'll make sure. And I'll get back to you next week. Postcard.
Any celebs you'd like to, like we had our Barack Obama story a bit earlier, any celebs you'd like to bump into?
That's a rather random question. That's a very extremely random question. Is there any celebs I'd like to...
We've had a question in from Tommy in Dublin too, and he's wondering if there's any celebrities you'd like to bump into in Budapest.
Not quite. Like in a sporting context, the one person I'd like to bump into is actually Eddie Jones. I'd really like to just have a conversation with Eddie Jones.
I would imagine that going to Budapest this weekend makes that somewhat unlikely.
Oh yeah, but I thought it was kind of like an open-ended question.
If you're in the Gellert Baths with the see-through sheet wrapped around you, who would you like to have a chat with?
I'm trying to think of any famous Hungarians, but I literally can't. So I'm kind of stumped there. Any Central Europeans at all? Really, I'm kind of stumped there as well. Not Angelina Jolie or Barack Obama, funnily enough.
Right. Okay.
But if there is somebody that I bump into who has a plaza named after him somewhere in Ireland, I'll make sure to tell them they've done a fine job of it.
Well, look, enjoy the weekend. I'm glad we did get there in the end.
Thank you. No, you enjoy yours as well.
Been a pleasure. Owen won't be here on Monday, but Anthony Moyles is going to be here. Ronan O'Gara is going to be here. And Alan, you're missing the most epic show of the year so far.
That's no coincidence.
Alan Quinlan is going to be here as well. So we're going to be looking back on what's a pretty phenomenal weekend of sport. Whatever you're doing with your weekend, enjoy it from us for this morning. Good morning.
So, if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 AM.